Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
I'd like to say something that I've prepared tonight.
All right, Alan.
Hello. How about that ride in? I guess that's why they call it Sin City. You guys might not know this, but I consider myself a bit of a loner. I tend to think of myself as a one-man wolf pack. But when my sister brought Doug home, I knew he was one of my own. And my wolf pack, it grew by one. So were there two of us, there were two of us in the wolf pack. I was alone first in the pack, and then Doug joined in later. And 6 months ago, when Doug introduced me to you guys, I thought, wait a second, could it be? And now I know for sure. I just added two more guys to my wolf pack. Four of us wolves running around the desert together in Las Vegas, looking for strippers and cocaine. So tonight, I make a toast.
What? What do you got there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
yeah. How are you doing?
What is that?
Hello, it is 33 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of May in the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the lushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milk banking district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon.
Thank you for coming by.
It is Tuesday, May 24th, 2011. And welcome to Day 12. It's the Rick Emerson radio program, a cavalcade of whimsy the likes of which your feeble earth mind can barely conceive. But yet, she will be your pleasure to receive on this day. If you'd like to join us today, 503-505-69. That's join us figuratively. You can't come here. Don't come here. Whatever you do, don't come here. You won't be let in or acknowledged in any way. You can call, though. That's a safe form of interaction for us. It's 503-505-6964. If you would like to telephone us, it's 503-505-6964. That's how fast technology moves. The telephone just sounds, I mean, it just sounds old and crusty. If you would like to telephone us today, I mean, just saying it, it's like I just hear like a dobro playing in my head and Ken Burns doing some sort of tedious narration about something or other.
If you would like to send us a message on the teletype.
Exactly. If you'd like to give us your sepia-tinged thoughts, you can do it. It's 503-505-6964. You can also, I don't know, if you don't know by now, really, I mean, how to web page and an email address. I mean, that's really on you. I can't be blamed for that. I don't think I'm going to give the email address out anymore. I'm going to quit giving it out. So on the net, you find it. You can also email Don Taylor, though, at showpony. That's a thing you might not know. You can email Don Taylor at showpony, S-H, just like it sounds, S-H-O-W. And I know it doesn't sound like anything because you probably never heard that. But be that as it may, it's S-H-O-W-P-O-N-Y. Not show peony.
No.
Not show piney.
No.
Not Shaw Pony.
Not Show Puny.
No. It's Show Pony at rickemerson.com. Isn't that right, Show Pony?
Yes. I was going to make some kind of a horse nose.
That's what I was hoping for.
I don't know how to make
alley-oop.
A horse nose.
I just threw that to you.
I can't do a horse noise.
No, you know, you only get one chance at comedy.
No, that doesn't
That's
work
That's just
either.
Spitting.
Yeah. I've got nothing.
All right. Somebody's asking if ignorant radio host at rickemerson.com. No. No, there's no. There doesn't need to be a separate address. That and Rick are the same. He and Rick are the same.
But you can follow him on that hashtag on Twitter.
That's right. It's hashtag ignorant radio host. I own that hashtag. He's me and I am he, and we are all the hashtag. So, yes, you can also get us via Skype. That you can hit us via Skype, as they say. It's Rick Emerson Show, all one word, and on a text box up on the website, and blah 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 blah. So there you go. It is 503-505-6964. The phone has become the thing. The phone number has become the thing. Maybe people are not used to it. They're less aware of. They might not be privy to that information. So now, that's the thing that I'm going to put all my emphasis on this week. Next week, I'm going to find something other, something else to distress, to really hammer home. But today, and for the rest of this week, phone number. Let's see. So coming up today, Clergy Watch, also Religious Nutcase Watch, Democracy on the March. Let's see. We'll do another installment of the greatest songs ever made. Wait, will we? Hold on.
You tell me.
Yes, we will. It's right here in my hands. It's very exciting.
You were typing away madly during the break, so I assumed you were writing something just brilliant.
Oh, and here's some additional sound for you there. All right. So, yes, another installment of the greatest songs ever made. That's coming up. We'll also recap last night's episode of House, which is the season finale, and also the... so it's the season finale. So it's the 23rd. I never figured out why they were doing an extra episode. Nobody's... I was looking online... Not because I really care, but just like it's the sort of thing that bugs me. I just don't like not knowing stuff. And I couldn't figure out why, after just decades of everybody doing 22 episodes, why they suddenly did 23. Not 25, not 16, just 23, just one more.
Because this season has been so awesome.
It made all the difference.
That people demanded extra.
But I mean, it's one thing if you were just doing like 13 episodes, which is like what, Justified does, or The Killing or something. Or if you're doing like... I don't know, if you're some damn soap opera and you're just on every day, you're doing like 100 episodes, like every few months, or whatever, 300 episodes a year or whatever that is. But 23 episodes is just weird. I mean, because that implies 23 episodes is like, that is 2 minutes extra from each show. So it's like if there was just like a little two, maybe that's what it is. Maybe they just had like 2 pages of spillover from the previous episodes and they thought, well, this is just gold. I mean, we're shaving off pieces of pure platinum here. Why should we just get rid of them, melt them, we're just casting them aside? We could actually just take these shavings, and assemble them. We could just take all of these sort of bits and scraps of I was going to say gobbledygook, but it becomes cobbledygook because it's a thing that they're just sort of cramming together and making a brand new episode out of it. It's kind of like how when they're
cobbledygook.
It's like when you're just taking, it's like when you're sweeping up the factory floor and you just say, what about all this dough that was not used to make Keebler EL fudge cookies? Let's just jam it into a ball and bake it and sell it to somebody. And that's what they did. And that ball of something was House Episode 23, and that somebody was me, Rick Emerson.
Well, according to Wikipedia, prior to the start of the remainder of the season in 2011, it was announced that a multi-episode arc that would feature House on the Road was scrapped, forcing David Shore to return to the show to rework the rest of the season. Furthermore, Fox ordered one more episode.
I wonder if they canceled
bringing
something.
The total to 23.
Or maybe if they canceled something, or if they were just... I wonder if there was like an ad buy. Like if there was somebody who showed up and he cut, look, I got enough money to buy 10 episodes of House, and there was only 9 episodes left.
I don't know.
And they said, well, hey, we'd love to take your money, Walmart, but we've only got 9 episodes. But you guys, I got enough money for 10 episodes. And I said, well, hold on just a second. And then they went out and they said, hey, can you make a 10th episode? Great, just do that. There's a lot of money. And then they went back and said, no, we'd love to take 10 episodes worth of your money, Walmart. And he said, great, here you go. Thank you. And then they said that might be it. I mean, look, stranger things have happened. We made people live in a car. Think we did that because we thought it was funny? No. So anyway, not we, by the way. That wasn't we. That was them. I was part of the we, but... Anyway,
Apparently it may have had something to do with the fact that David Shore, according to a piece on Deadline Hollywood back in January, David Shore was going to not be paying any attention to House because he wasn't actually paying attention to House. He was busy with a reboot of The Rockford Files for NBC.
That's a great idea.
Which did not get picked up.
That's hard to believe.
For the development season. And so he ended up...
back to the well.
Yeah, he ended up coming back, and then, for some reason, I think that's why, Fox decided, okay then, we want an extra episode, who knows? but
well, just use all your extra leftover creative genius. Can you take that Rockford Files season and make it into a single episode of House? That'd be awesome. Great.
It kind of also helps to explain why the season blew so badly.
That they scrapped everything and had to write it from scratch?
Yeah, because he was gone, and then he ended up coming back and going, whoa, 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 whoa.
House on the road? That's insane.
We don't like any of this. Okay, let's just write everything over again at the last minute.
Let me replace it with my rarefied brand of David Shore genius.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well done. Let's see. Okay, so this is... Okay, so I guess this is... Well, there's the cynical view in which someone says, House could not contain enough crap in only those 22 episodes. There needed to be a spillover bucket, and that bucket was last night. Or there's this. They needed the final episode to explain why there wouldn't be a Cuddy next year, because they didn't know that when they were writing all of the previous episodes, which makes sense. If they were scrapping it and rewriting it at the last minute, they also then would have had to take into account her, because I guess they were negotiating up to the last moment, and why next season will start in Hawaii or Florida, which apparently is the case.
But Fox, well, first of all, we don't know that for a fact, and we'll discuss that later. But Fox ordered this extra episode as far back as at least January.
Really?
Yeah. Because that's when this Deadline Hollywood piece was that I just read.
Interesting.
That was January 11th. So, and Fox had previous to that ordered the extra episode.
We'll hash it all out, I suppose.
It may just be that House makes so damn much money that Fox ordered an extra episode so they could make that much more money.
Well, I mean, that's why they started splitting The Sopranos into two seasons. I mean, it wasn't just because David Chase had writer's block. It was because they thought, I mean, HBO was like, why not keep people on the hook, keep them from canceling their subscription? We'll just draw this out, and we'll make it expensive for them to cancel and re-up. And so it will be financially advantageous for people to stay subscribed to HBO through the down period. Because what would happen is people would get to the end of The Sopranos, and they would cancel HBO and go, well, I'll re-up in like 2 years. And so HBO, then I think they actually increased the sort of, they made it expensive to cancel and then re-up. And then at the same time, they split The Sopranos. So like 20 episodes became two seasons instead of one. And so people said, well, we might as well just stay subscribed. It's going to be back in like 7 months. Because they were just chopping it in half. They were doing this sort of King Solomon's decision, you know, with the Solemnic baby was in fact, you know, The Sopranos. So, all right. So we'll talk about last night's finale of House. Let's see. Yeah, Clergy Watch, Democracy in the March, Religious Nutcase Watch. Let's see what else. Oh, we'll find out what happened to Don's dog's bowels. Remind me that when we're talking about House, nobody let me forget this. To talk about this thing with Lisa Edelstein and Twitter and me last night.
Ooh.
Well, it's not that exciting. Oh. I didn't talk to her in it. But remind me that there is a Lisa Edelstein, Rick Emerson Twitter sort of nexus thing that is legitimately interesting. Hold on, Steen. Even if you don't really care about House or Lisa Edelstein, this is interesting.
Is it as interesting as Joe Dante friending me on Facebook?
No, but nothing is. Go ahead, tell everybody your happy news.
That was a little story. I was going through that thing on Facebook the other day where it was just like, here's some other people you should know. And I was like, okay. And I looked at all these people that was like, you have 15 friends in common. You have 30 friends in common. You have 12 friends in common. And a lot of these people, I was like, I don't like you or I don't know who you are, so I don't care. But a number of them, like I think probably 10 or 12 of them, I said, okay, sure, let's make that connection. And one of them, for some reason, I'm assuming probably because I have friends who are film critics, I had a number of friends in common with the director Joe Dante.
Of Gremlins fame.
Yes.
And Piranha.
Piranha. And so I just like, oh, what the hell? So I clicked thing, and I got this thing last night after the show was over. You were talking to Greg and Sarah, and I was in the kitchen, and you heard me go, woohoo, you know, something. And I was like, came running in with my phone in my hands, like, it says, Joe Dante has friended you on Facebook.
That's just weird.
I was very excited.
I don't think I'm friends with anybody famous. I mean, I maybe I am, and maybe I just do. Maybe I don't know. I mean, you know, when I mean famous, like out. What is that song? There's that song by the Buttery Lords. We're famous, but only in Portland. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm friends with anybody who's actually. I mean, I guess you could say there are people in Portland who are, you know, known to some degree outside here. But you know what I mean, like a Joe Dante or like whatever. Like I don't think I have any Shatner-esque friends on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Largely because I don't seek them out, and of course they're not going to seek me out because who am I? So
I think the most famous person. Because, you know, a lot of people are on Facebook because, you know, friend is a misnomer.
Sure.
It's just you read each other's stuff.
Right.
And a lot of people, like, someone in this room maybe I could name goes on Facebook and like rarely actually like reads what other people post. They friend people and they post things themselves, but they don't really actually follow the
Are you
other
talking
people.
About me?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
that's
you.
Me. By the way, I don't friend people. I just let people friend me.
Yes, but you have to friend them back. You have to confirm.
Well, I have to hit the thing.
Confirm
yeah.
the friendship.
Okay.
I think the most famous person I think who has actually ever like responded and I've communicated with through Facebook was Mary Jo Peel of Mystery Science Theater.
Ah, yes.
You know, because I do. Yeah, you know, I mean, I am friends connected with a few people that are famous, but it's one of those things where I don't think they actually read like
no,
what
well,
I wrote. You know.
Well, it's like I got a thing the other day on the. I don't even know if I should say. I was going to talk about LinkedIn, which is a thing that I have. I mean, we've talked about LinkedIn before, but it's like I have it and I never use it ever.
Yeah.
It's just there because, like, I didn't want that guy in Alabama to get it. So that's my whole thing now is just signing up as Rick Emerson Places just to thwart that guy, just to make his life unpleasant because he's such a jerk. But I say as I'm like domain squatting on like everything. But I'm on LinkedIn. And so, see, I don't even know if I should say, because if I say, so I'm on LinkedIn, well, I guess if I say it, if I say I'm on LinkedIn, if somebody's on, they could, what am I trying to say? I didn't want to sort of inadvertently give away somebody's contact info, but I guess by definition, if you're on LinkedIn, it's visible anyway, like if you're a friend of mine. Like, if you're connected to me on LinkedIn, can you, like, see the contact info for everybody that I'm connected to?
Maybe. It is supposed to be a professional thing, so I would imagine yes.
Oh, whatever. Anyway, so it's like I got a thing from. I mean, it was. I mean, again, you know, there's a bad pun to be made here that I will not make. But I mean, sort of famous, kind of famous. It's what's her name, Penny Lane, Penny Trumbull.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, you know, and so like I have no idea like why it was just like that was like just like Monday. I have no idea why. I have no idea why she suddenly just woke up one day and said, I need to connect to Rick Emerson on LinkedIn. There's no reason on earth why she would have done that. I'm not saying I'm not a likable guy. Clearly I am. But there's no, like, Sunday or Monday or whenever it was, that was no different than, like, last week or last month or, like, next year. There is no reason, to my knowledge, why she would have just woken up on Monday morning and decided that she couldn't go another day without being connected to me on LinkedIn. I have zero idea why she did that.
I kind of screwed up LinkedIn because I had people I went through this thing about a month or so ago where a couple of people had asked me to join it. I thought, I'm a business person now. I'm a professional. I may be sure I could do this. And I'd avoided it for a long time. And people were going, no, it's great. You should do it. You'd explain to me what it was. So it's like, okay, so I'll do this. And then I signed up for it. And then it was like, would you like to connect with, you know, other people that you know already
right.
that are on LinkedIn? And I said, sure, I would like to do that. Go ahead and do that for me. And what it ended up doing was, much like my kerfuffle with the iPod the other day, it sent a LinkedIn invitation to every single person in my Gmail contact list.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. How many names would you say that is?
I don't know, 150, 200 more.
Excellent.
I have
well
no
done.
Idea. So all of a sudden I start getting these things like, so-and-so is like accepted your thing on LinkedIn. So, and so now, and the thing is, I can't even remember what my damn like password is.
Does
to
your
log
Gmail
into the thing.
Automatically, do you have your Gmail set to do the thing where anytime you respond to somebody, their name goes in your address book?
Yes. Yes. So I had all these people.
Some guy's selling you a toaster oven.
People I have just like exchanged email with over, I don't even know what. Got like invitations.
Why, yes, I do like enema porn.
Oh, God.
And then suddenly you're like sending them a LinkedIn invite. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I think it was Sarah that did something with. This is like a. I was going to say in the early days of Facebook when they were screwing us all by changing their privacy settings. But like.
Yeah, I have 85 connections on LinkedIn and I've never even like looked at it and I don't really care.
None of those people are ever going to get you a job, by the way.
No.
I don't want to rain in
no.
your parade. Like in the early days of us using Facebook where Sarah accidentally sent like everyone, she sent everybody in her like Gmail account, which she had somehow like linked to Facebook, but she accidentally invited everyone in her Gmail address book to her high school reunion, which is great. No idea how she did it. None. Zero. And then she did it again later, I think, with Richie's drag show. Just accidentally invited like everybody she'd ever emailed, like to come see Richie's drag show, which by the way, would, you know, a lot of attendance there. So, hey, who's to knock that? But yeah, so what was I talking about? Why were we talking about LinkedIn? Penny Lane,
Penny
Facebook.
Lane. Yeah.
Celebrities. Oh, yeah. Joe Dante. Da-da-da-da. So you're friends with Joe Dante on Facebook.
Yeah.
Tell him I love Piranha.
Okay, I will.
All right. Let's see. What else? Yeah, that's it. Real quickly. So your dog ate like a pound of butter and a...
Half a pound of butter, yeah.
A loaf of bread and a quart of milk or whatever. So your dog ate half a pound of butter. And then by the way, the one funny thing about this story, and maybe there are other things, was that you were clearly just like staying here long enough so that Patrick would have to go home first because he left the butter out and clean up whatever like explosive dog discharge was waiting for you.
Yeah.
And he was obviously waiting for you to do the same thing. And it was just like this weird Mexican standoff just waiting to see. So who... Did he finally agree to just at least go in the house first and clean it up in advance of you having to see it?
Yes, I picked him up from work, and then we got home, and then he went in the house first. Then he came back out and went, nope, it's okay. And I said, really?
How is that possible?
I don't know. And the dog, you know, did her business. We took her out, and she was fine, and everything was great. Until this morning. And apparently it took like 24 hours to work its way through because she didn't do anything in the house. She's a very good girl. She's a very good dog. Bella is an excellent dog. But we took her out this morning, you know, to do, you know, her dog thing. And it was just
like
yellow.
Like a fire hose?
Nah, not really that, but it was yellow. It was like butter colored. And then she came in the house and I fed her. And then she just laid down on the floor. And then the whole next like hour and a half, 2 hours while I was sitting there working on the laptop, she just lay there on the floor farting.
Oh, that's great.
So that was, but that was the worst it was.
I guess it could have been much worse.
It could have been much worse.
I mean, you could have gone home and just like a new paint job everywhere. And that's no good. You don't want that.
And then, of course, being a dog, I'm getting ready for work. She's like, can I have a cookie? You always give me a cookie when I'm leaving. I'm like, come on. Your intestinal tract is like a war zone right now. No, I'm not giving you a cookie.
It's really not, though. I bet it's like one of those log flumes or whatever. Like one of the, like, it's like a Splash Mountain. One of those water park slides.
Yeah.
By the way, Rick Rutherford once admitted, he said he got a personal message from the, I got a personal message from the conjoined twins, Lori and Dory Chappelle on Facebook.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know who that is.
I don't either.
Interesting.
I mean, good for you, sir. Conjoined twins. Awesome.
By the way, somebody has just sent me the LinkedIn service agreement. This part of the LinkedIn terms of service. It says, additionally, you grant LinkedIn a non-exclusive, irrevocable, worldwide, perpetual, unlimited, assignable, sub-licensable, fully paid, then royalty-free right to use, copy, prepare, derivative works of, improve, distribute, publish, remove, retain, add, process, analyze, use, and commercialize in any way known, discovered, or in the future, including but not limited to blah, 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 any data you provide to LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I don't think that's made up. I think that's real. So basically, I've given, like, my bone marrow. LinkedIn. Well, I've given Penny Lane's bone marrow. Or maybe she's given it to me. I don't know. I don't even know how that works. Maybe she'll remember me this time. Here's the thing about Penny Lane, who is very sweet. I mean, she's nice, you know, nice lady. I've met her several times. It's just that every single time I meet her, it's with Byron Beck for some reason. And every single time, Byron introduces me to her and her to me. And I'm the only one in the trio that remembers that we've done it like several times before. Byron doesn't remember that he's introduced me to her. She doesn't remember being introduced to me by Byron. She doesn't remember Byron, you know, like I, of the three of us. And he's like, Penny Lane, I'd like you to meet my friend Rick Emerson. Rick Emerson, this is Miss Penny Lane. And then I'm sitting there just going, like I've met you like 15 times and it's always with this guy introducing. We've done this same thing. The same exchange of information over. I would imagine, no exaggeration, I would imagine that Byron has introduced me to Penny Lane and me to her, you know, and her to me, like 7 times. And it always seems to be at that Willamette Week, like that Best of Portland party that they throw every year in a parking lot. So one of these times, like, it's got to stick, or maybe not. Like, maybe that's what the LinkedIn thing is for. I don't know. Apparently, the conjoined twins are the ones who had a country singing career. What? That doesn't explain anything. You can't explain it by saying. You can't explain who conjoined twins are by saying, I know them because they had a country singing career.
Well, yeah, because that just makes it even more intriguing and strange.
I mean, I guess by definition that makes them distinct, but also that makes it a crazy thing that doesn't really exist, I would imagine.
Yeah.
What do you mean I talked about them before? This is Cheryl, who's yelling at me via the text. You've talked about that. She's just typing, what is wrong with me? I'm not the one who's conjoined. Quit putting my own hashtag on the screen. I'm minimizing this. Damn you. I don't know who the conjoined... Do we talk about conjoined country music twins? I mean, even saying it out loud, it seems like a thing I never would have talked about.
I think I would have remembered that.
All right. Apparently, it was a few years ago, she says, followed by, you ass. All right. Mm. Okay, I just, well, okay. I'll just take your word. I don't remember this show. I can barely remember most of the people I've worked with on this program. So, I mean, it's just, you know.
Yeah, I don't remember stuff that we've talked about by the time I get home.
No. Because why would you? I mean, really, what would be the point of that? Because then you're one of those guys that's on the PDX radio forum trying to trade air checks of, like, an old St. Louis Top 40 station with, like, you know, like an urban station, like a Churban, Top 40 or something in Los Angeles.
Churban?
That's a contemporary urban? Hit urban radio. I swear to God, that's a real format. Churban.
So who would you say is the most interesting? I mean, as in, if you just had to, like, say, oh, and I know a person who
it's you,
X.
Dawn.
No, on your Facebook.
Oh, I thought who you were just, you I thought you were wanting me to say you
no,
as
no.
the answer to this.
I was saying that, you know, of people, if you had to say, I know someone who, like, could join twins or whatever
well,
it is.
Well, you mean that's entertaining to other people or that is, like, interesting because of who they are?
Yeah, either one.
Well, I can't think of it. I mean, when I say I can't think of anybody interesting who they are, I mean, there's lots of people interesting who, you know, as your mother says, everybody is very special. I don't think I have any celebrities or whatever who are on my Facebook. So, in terms of just sheer amusement value.
Well, like, I have a friend on Facebook who does midget porn.
Yeah, well, I don't think I. Yeah, I don't know.
She has her own line of DVDs and stuff.
I can't say. I mean, I'm not saying that the audience isn't interesting or the people that I know aren't interesting, but I don't really have anything like that. I mean, I don't, yeah, I got nothing. I mean, there are people who are entertaining. I mean, it's like, you know, you got a guy like Todd the Corpse. You know, he's always hilarious. He puts stuff up there. It's funny. Cheryl puts stuff up there. It's interesting. You know, if somebody else puts stuff up there, it's pithy or it's amusing or it's enraging. But I don't think I have anybody, like, there's nobody who makes balloon animals of Peruvian gods or anything. I can't. No, there's nobody who really leaps to mind. Isn't it, like, Twitter is different, though. Like, on Twitter, I think it's a lot easier to pick up people who are interesting. This is the most boring conversation in the world, probably, to most people. I think on Twitter, it's more interesting to find people who are interesting because it's like on Twitter, the stuff that is interesting stands out really, really easily and quickly because it's hard to be funny and brief. You know, it's how brevity is the soul of wit, but it's like finding people who are witty and brief all at once. That's a difficult thing to do. And so people who are regularly people who are consistently funny and consistently bring quality stuff to the table on Twitter, they stand out. Because everybody else just fades into the background. I mean, there are people. I think that's how I demarcate Twitter. Is that there are people on Twitter who, when I see that they posted something, I take the 3 seconds to read it, and there are people that just go by as a blur in the background. People who are consistently good on Twitter stand out almost immediately because most things on Twitter are just bland and just not that interesting at all. And this is actually a good way to segue into something. When I see that Anna Griffin from The Oregonian has tweeted something, I always make a point of reading it. And not just because we know her, because she's on the show, because the stuff she writes is always really funny or interesting. Or here's the thing that she does, too. She's careful with her linking. If she links to something, it's a thing that I usually want to see. It's like she's not just going like, and here's what, for the love of Christ, here's something that she doesn't do. Like, attention everyone else on the goddamn internet. Here's something she doesn't do. She doesn't put up a mother effing post on Twitter that just says, like, she doesn't write this. She doesn't write, boy, this says it all, colon, tiny URL link that doesn't tell me what I'm clicking on. Because here's the thing. I'm never going to know because I'm never going to click on it. It's like how, like, a year ago on Dig, if anybody goes to Dig, which is sort of like FARC, like, at some point on Dig, everybody just had to start, identifying all of their posts as mind equals blown. And then it would be like a photograph of something weird. But it's like mind equals blown as the subject line after like the millionth time somebody said means nothing. It doesn't tell me anything about what I'm going to click on. And so as a result, I'm not going to click on it. Here's what that is. That is the 21st century version of this. That is like this. And by the way, I'm looking at you like Barbati's Pan and all McMiniman's locations everywhere. It is when people would have web pages and all of the buttons or navigational things on the webpage wouldn't actually tell you what they were. They would just say things like, you know, fanciful. And it's like, well, what is it? Is it the email? Is it your schedule? What is it?
Or the goddamn McMenamins thing where it's like a magical mountain thing of all the different locations all piled on top of each
other.
And you have to hover over the picture of the one and guess which one it's going to be before you can click
on it.
Show
me the one that says calendar or like buy tickets here. Yeah, that is it. And it's like everything is like, and it's like a weird Java thing that takes like an hour to load. Yeah, the thing of the indistinct or the vaguely labeled navigational buttons, that's a thing that became old like 5 seconds after it was created. And that is the thing now with like vague tweets where some, what a stitch! And then it's like a bit.ly thing that I'm never going to click on. So, you know, just like FYI. Anna Griffin never does that. So that is not a thing that that she traffics in. No, sir. Maybe that's why. Don Taylor. I mean, the fact that she takes a great deal of craft and care with her writing, and that she actually puts a great deal of effort into her compositional structure. Maybe that is why she is part of the 74th class of Nieman Fellows. What are the Nieman Fellows, you ask? Well, I'll tell you, you. And I will just read the press release here. And she actually was, this is, and I have to say this, and I mean this, I don't mean this in a snarky way, because this is the sort of thing, especially when men say this about women, this is the sort of thing that can sometimes come off as being snarky or condescending. And I think Dawn will back me up on this when I say this, that Anna Griffin, first of all, is like mind-bendingly smart. I mean, she's like, you know, she's just like whip smart. But also, and I don't even really know all the levels in which I mean this. But, you know, here's the thing about Anna Griffin. Would you agree with me that she is just, like, as cute as a button?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she's just adorable. I mean, she really is. And I'm not, and again, I don't mean that in, like, in the way that guys sometimes mean it, where it's meant to be sort of like a disempowering kind of a, you know, for a lady. Or that you're cute because you have no other skills.
No.
In a harmless kind of way.
Or that you're cute because, you know, I find you sexually attractive.
Yeah.
Not that kind of cute. You know, not fluffy bunny cute, not any of those
kinds
of cute.
You're cute because you don't threaten me in any way.
Right. No, she's just adorable because she's just kind of, she's awesome.
She's just great. That's the thing.
She's sweet and she's nice. And then she says something that's kind of edgy and a little bit dark. And you go, oh, that's awesome.
So she put this up on Twitter this morning. It was from about, let's see, about 9 o'clock. Let's see. Oh, by the way, I had 90 minutes of sleep last night in case I sound fuzzy at any point today. She says, on Twitter, nice to finally be able to talk about why I've been grinning like a crazy person for the last 3 weeks. And then she links to a thing that Jim Romanesco put up. And Jim Romanesco works at a site called Pointer, which is just a sort of a media blog. It's talking about media happenings. And I will just read this press release real quickly here, and then we'll get to some actual stuff. But this is from Dateline, Cambridge, Massachusetts. Let's see, it seems like I gotta have an appropriate bed for this. Hold on a second. Have you done the headlines?
No.
Let's do this actually right now while I find the appropriate bed, okay. And I'll read this thing about Anna Griffin, and then we'll get to some other things.
Okay, before we do the real headlines,
yes.
I just wanted to tell you that it is very sad, and it's sometimes whenever you have that thing where you actually see a headline that's from The Onion, and you believe hook, line, and sinker that could possibly be true.
Yeah.
Because Roger Ebert had linked to it, and so I thought, because it's Roger Ebert, it must be true, but Onion headline... Final minutes of last Harry Potter movie to be split into 7 separate films.
Awesome.
And I was like, what?
Like a horcrux.
And then I realized, oh, wait, no, that's not actually real. No, actually, today we've got Oprah is taping her final episode. Iceland's volcanic ash is creating havoc in European airways. And a Florida woman fires a gun inside her ex-husband's closet. And then everything gets weird from there.
Wonderful. All right, so let me just read this. This is a... Dateline, Cambridge, Massachusetts. The Nieman Foundation for... I'm not making this up. The Nieman Foundation for Journalism at Harvard has selected 24 journalists from the United States and abroad to become the 74th class of Nieman Fellows. The group includes journalists who work for newspapers, magazines, radio, television, and online news organizations. We were callously overlooked and excluded. Announcing the class, Nieman Foundation curator Bob Giles said, the class of 2012 includes journalists who have reported from around the globe on an extraordinarily wide range of topics and in many cases under dangerous circumstances. They will bring diverse interests and experiences that will enrich one another and the Harvard community. The new class of fellows holds great promise for leadership in advancing the practice of serious journalism in difficult times. Now, what does it mean if you are a Nieman Fellow? What do you actually do? Well, I'll tell you. Established in 1938, the Nieman Foundation administers the oldest mid-career fellowship program for journalists in the world. Working journalists of accomplishment and promise, it says, are selected to, wait for it, come to Harvard for a year of study, seminars, and special events. More than 1,300 journalists from 91 countries have received Nieman Fellowships since 1938. This year, Nieman Fellows include Jonathan Blakely. He's the foreign desk producer from NPR. Tyler Bridges, who is an author and freelance journalist based in Lima, Peru. And Anna Griffin, Metro columnist from The Oregonian. She will study the evolution and future of American cities with an emphasis on the role government agencies play in combating poverty and controlling sprawl.
Wow.
Going to spend a year at Harvard.
She is so much smarter than we are.
Yes. Yes, she is. So there you go.
I don't even know what that thing she's studying means.
Hey, would you like to hear, but here's the thing. Would you like to hear what one of these other guys, and I'm not trying to mock, but would you like to hear one of the other guys who was, and I'm, in no way am I diminishing that, as though I could.
Well, yeah.
With my mighty pulpit and my zombie knowledge. But I'm just telling, like, if you want to know in a nutshell, like, what sort of people she'll be rubbing elbows with, let me just read this to you. This is one of the other Nieman Fellows for 2012. James Geary, editor of Ode magazine and a freelance journalist based in London. I swear to you, this is exactly how it's written. I am not augmenting or changing this. Will undertake a multidisciplinary study of wit.
Oh, I hate him.
Yeah, so there you go.
Oh, we hate... You know, all of this, though, the Anna Griffin and the whatnot and the fellowship, it really does make my being friends with Joe Dante on Facebook thing seem a lot lamer than it was.
Yeah, I wasn't going to point that out. That's okay. Glad you came to the conclusion on your own, so we don't have to make that observation. So, and if you saw the tweet from Anna, I don't know, 2 or 3 days ago, she had a truly awful week last week. She had like one of the worst weeks in the history of recorded man, I think. So I'm glad that she had a little bit of good news. So she'll be in the studio tomorrow to make us feel dumber. It is 503-505-6964. 503. Thank you, sir. He's saying, wait a minute, she's smarter than Rick Emerson and Don Taylor. You are setting the bar high today. Thank you. It's what we do.
Combined.
Talking about yellow dog poo. All right. Let's see. Have I got anything else to get to? Oh, and I ate a bunch of laughing cow cheese this morning while watching Twilight Eclipse. There you go. I am not a Nieman Fellow.
No.
I'm barely a multi-celled organism, really, when you think about it. What did I write? Why did I write Last of the Gladiators? Oh, no, Last of the Granola. When I was not the same thing.
Much less epic.
No, so I am the last of the granola. So this morning, yes, as I was sitting there after my 90 minutes of non-restful sleep, and you were right last hour when you said I'm watching Twilight Eclipse in just in tiny sips to make it last. Mm. I am convinced that movie exists only like just for drinking games, and it's all just about when that Tyler Lautner guy takes off his shirt or says something that's a double entendre. I swear to you, you've seen it, right?
Oh yeah.
So there's this sequence where what's her name? Kristen Stewart is, they're like in a tent, I don't know, outside for some reason. I guess just so this can happen. And it's cold and she's like hyperventilating and she's getting, you know, whatever. She's getting hyperthermia and she's freezing. And but they have to stay outside because I don't know, they're hiding from something or other. And, but she's freezing to death. And of course, Edward can't warm her because he's a vampire and so he has no body heat.
Right.
And so Taylor Lautner says, and they're all three in the tent together to maximize the sexual tension. Mm-hmm. And so Taylor Lautner says, well, you know, she's going to freeze to death otherwise. I guess I'll have to use my body to warm her. And then he looks at what's his name? He looks at Edward and says, because, you know, I'm hotter than you are. And there's just like this long pause. So everybody in the audience can go, sex. So there you go. So that's what I did this morning. And then I didn't buy granola just to accompany my viewing of Twilight, but I was rooting around in the back of the cupboard and I found a box of old granola. Yeah. And here's the difference between me and maybe most people. I don't throw things away when it's just crumbs at the bottom. I save the crumbs for later, and then I eat them with a spoon when no one is looking. Except for this morning when the spoon seemed like too much work. So I just pulled the bag out, and if you had been looking in my window at home, and you probably were, if you've been looking in my window at home this morning, you would have seen me sitting in my boxer shorts, which are covered with schematic diagrams of the teletype. And watching Twilight and then holding a plastic bag of granola crumbs, just going, and just pouring it into my mouth. I am not a Nieman Fellow, by the way, again, just in case you were curious. I will not, I have a multidisciplinary study of sloth and shame.
I sat over here during the break in between the shows, and my lunch today was pub cheese at Crackers.
Excellent.
So, you know.
Well done for all of us.
Yeah.
We're awesome.
Yeah. As sad as my addiction to pub cheese has now reached the point where I am transporting it with me to work so I could eat it in the middle of the day.
Okay. Do you have, like, a special pouch or something for, like, a container? I thought I was kidding.
No.
Wow. Okay.
Tiny little plastic-topped container that I scooped. I scooped today's serving of pub cheese into.
Today's serving of pub cheese. At least you didn't like just scoop it out with the actual container, because that would be slothful.
No, that would be disgusting.
All right. By the way, the music you're listening to here, this is a song called "Plasma Shells" from the album "Star Pilot's Lament" by our good friend Keelan King. So that comes out, I believe, on June 7th. We're going to have him in the studio next Thursday to talk about the whole story behind and the imminent release of that album. That'll be coming up next Thursday. Coming up this Thursday, and I'll just say little bits of business, then we'll do stuff. So tomorrow, Anna Griffin's going to be in the studio, and we'll give her our congratulations. And then I don't know when she's leaving. I don't know if that's like tomorrow or like next year, but then she's going to be gone for like a year. She insists she's coming back to Portland. So that'll be tomorrow, and then Thursday, our good friend Siegfried Zeliger will be in the studio with us.
Hooray.
To talk about the Zombie Film Festival, which is coming up this Friday at the Hollywood Theater. That is going to be starting at, I believe the first one was at 9:40, I think. But it's going to be a back-to-back feature, Demons and Night of the Comet. That is happening this Friday at the Hollywood Theater as we get ready to wrap up the May of the Dead spectacular. You can find out more about that at mayofthedead.com. And then Saturday is going to be a game day at Guardian Games, where it's a whole day of zombie-themed games and fun and hilarity and whatnot. So find out more about all that at mayofthedead.com. But Siegfried will be in the studio this Thursday to talk about Demons and Night of the Comet, which I don't think I've seen in... When did Night of the Comet come out? Like 84?
Sure.
Something like that. I don't think I've seen it since then, since whenever it hit video stores.
I have either.
Yeah, it's been a long, long time. He'll be in the studio with us on, 84. He's going to be in the studio with us on Thursday, and then Big Jim Willig will be here Friday with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. All right, granola, pub cheese, Twilight, dog poo, and I'm going to save this thing about Lisa Edelstein. I don't want to give it all away at once.
No.
Oh, and then later on, greatest songs ever made, and so forth, because we have culture. At the news desk, here is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Oprah Winfrey is taping the final episodes of her talk show in front of an audience of thousands at Chicago's United Center. Here is the introduction to one of the programs taped yesterday.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. This is totally my fault. I was not quite not quite prepared. No,
I'm sorry.
Is because I got this sound betwixt the two shows.
Oops.
It's fine. Is it redundant to say in between?
No.
Really? Couldn't you just say between?
You could.
Okay.
But I don't know. We just used that whole in between thing.
I was just killing time there. Okay. You want to give me the lead up there again?
Okay. Sure. Here's the introduction to one of Oprah's programs taped yesterday.
Please welcome Oprah.
Oh.
That soundbite wasn't very interesting.
No. Tom Hanks was the first to make, it says a cameo. So I guess he just like popped in and then he left again.
Your studio just wasn't big enough to hold it all, so here we are.
Where are they? Do we know where they're taping
Chicago's United Center.
All right, okay.
Which seats thousands and thousands of people.
Now, here's the thing about Oprah, because again, when I say I'm an Oprah fan, I mean, I am an Oprah admirer. I have a great amount of respect for Oprah, and I've watched, I would not pretend that I haven't watched her show over the years. I don't watch it like religiously or anything. But I don't really know this. So is it, because she's got her own network that she's, no pun intended, but she's got her network, yeah. The Oprah network, and then she's going to be doing a show there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but is it, it's not going to be the Oprah show. Like, is it going to be, do we know if it's going to be like the same basic format or if
no,
it's...
No, I think it's a completely different format. I think she's just moving on to something else.
I wonder if this is going to be a different format the way that Phil Hendry said he was never going to do his character voices again. And then that lasted for like a week. And then suddenly Bobby Dooley was on the phone with him. So I don't know if that is a vow that will be difficult for her to keep.
Probably.
Because I'm not saying that she really, it's not like she needs the money or the ratings or whatever, but I mean, you know, she's been doing one thing and specializing in one thing for like 25 years or whatever now. So I would imagine it's going to be difficult for her to change her stripes in that regard.
Yes. I don't know. I don't really keep up with Oprah. That's one of those things.
Do you not watch Oprah?
I really don't watch Oprah.
Really? That surprises me.
I don't think I ever really watched Oprah with any regularity. And particularly over the last few years, the only time I ever tune is if something like, you know, the woman who had like her face ripped off by the chimp is going to be on or something.
Well, then you can just see that online usually. You can just watch like the YouTube sections of that.
Yeah, I don't really watch Oprah.
The thing about the Oprah show is it's not legitimately charming the way that like the Ellen show is. Ellen show is much more accessible in that way because it's, you know, because I think it has that sort of, because it has that, it kind of has the scrappy underdog kind of a thing going on because she is, you know, because Ellen's whole persona also is that she's just sort of goofy. Ellen has done a really, and I don't know if this was always the case because I really only know her stand up. And then I know her talk show. I didn't really watch her sitcom all that much, so I don't know if this is the thing that is the hallmark of kind of all of her projects. But Ellen DeGeneres has a really, really carefully crafted or at least well conveyed persona, which is that she's sort of not a loser, but that she's sort of, but that she's a little hapless, just a little sort of. Just a little left of competent at many things, you know, but in a sort of charming, kind of smart sort of way. That she's an intelligent person who can just never quite get things to work properly. She always gets the fuzzy end of the lollipop, as Marilyn Monroe once said. So, but Oprah, of course, doesn't have any of that. I mean, Oprah has a very like well crafted and very sort of bulletproof persona that she puts forward and even when it looks as like she's dropping the persona, like when she does what she calls the ugly, and how weird that I know more about Oprah than you do, but when she does what she calls the ugly cry, which is where like the big like you know, Tammy Faye like mascara smearing, like when she's talking to somebody who was like beaten by their father with a 2x4 and then kept in a chicken shed for 10 years or something, it's like she'll, you know. She just does like the full-on cry, but even that is sort of, you know, I don't want to say it's not sincere, but it's obviously, you know, she knows how to present herself for television. But it really is, I mean, her show is, it's exceptionally well-done television. I mean, it's very, very well done. It's television of a certain kind done about as well. It is not a stretch at all, and I would say it is probably the only accurate comparison you could make with Oprah is Johnny Carson. I mean, really, the only that in terms of television, he's probably the only person. He's the only broadcaster on television, I think, that you could really use as a benchmark by which to compare Oprah. And I would say that they are probably. I mean, I know it sounds sacrilegious to some people to say that they're probably equals in that way. But I mean, you think about it. He didn't create the talk show format, and he was like the third guy to host that show. And she obviously never, you know, she didn't always do a show like she does now. I mean, she trafficked in sleaze like everybody else, but I mean, she really perfected. Like Carson, she perfected that form. You know, Carson took a thing that had sort of existed in its embryonic stage, and he just polished it and did it better than anybody had ever done it before, and just made it and just you know, and really just was. He just made it into a well-oiled, perfectly tuned machine. And that's what she did, too. I mean, she didn't create the daytime talk show format. I mean, I don't know if she was actually preceded by people like Sally Jesse Raphael, but she wasn't the only one doing it. But she just did it better than anybody, and she just absolutely just...
No, she actually did precede Sally Jesse Raphael. I think because she...
But Phil Donahue, though, preceded her, though.
Right. She started locally in Chicago, but her only competition at the time was Phil Donahue.
And so I think her thing is not necessarily creating that format, but just doing it better. I mean, just like polishing it to a high gloss and doing it better than anybody has ever done it. And she is, like Carson, I think she will be forevermore the gold standard by which the daytime television format is judged. I can't imagine a time when anybody ever surpasses Oprah in terms of being the benchmark for that format. I mean, she really is. I mean, she is it is exceptionally well done broadcasting in that way. And I'm not really the target demo for it, but I mean, she is. But she really is one of a kind at what she does. So it is, you know. And I mean, and let's be honest, you know. However much things may have changed over the last 25 years, and maybe it's a lot, maybe it's a little. Things were certainly different 25 years ago. And I mean, a woman in what is now still a man's world, and what was an even, you know, what was more of a man's world then, and a black woman, and a black woman in an industry that is not kind to women who are not aesthetically flawless in a predetermined, very unachievable way, many times. I mean, you know, So, I mean, you know, the odds were long against her, like in 100 different ways. So you got to give it up for her, because isn't she like the richest woman in the world or something?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
I mean, you know, if it's not her, I mean, she might like just be behind like a queen
she's
somewhere.
She's the richest
or something.
Woman in show business.
I think she's probably the richest woman in America.
Yeah, I think she might be the richest woman in America.
And I would imagine she's in the top. I mean, you know, unless there is like some royalty or something somewhere, you know, like somebody who just inherited, you know, family wealth. I can't imagine that she's not in the top 10 like worldwide. She may be number one. I don't know. Hey, did you know that William Buffett still lives in the same house that he bought in 1952?
Yeah, I knew that.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's weird.
I've been reading a lot about these guys lately. It's been very strange. Like in the May issue of Vanity
William
Fair.
Warren Buffett.
Warren Buffett, yeah. In the May issue of Vanity Fair as well, there was an excerpt from Paul Allen's book. And it's like the chapter on his first starting Microsoft with Bill Gates.
Yeah.
And just fascinating, absolutely fascinating. I find myself weirdly fascinated by these guys.
By Paul Allen, or just by people who are really rich.
Paul Allen and Warren, but guys that are really rich, but that seem to be kind of normal guys. Like one of the things Paul Allen talks about is, you know, he knew Bill Gates way back when. They went to high school together. That's when they first started, you know, tinkering around with computers, and his family didn't have any money. Gates came from money.
Yeah.
Gates's family was rich. But Paul Allen just wasn't at all. And so it's kind of interesting to think just like where he came from and the vast amounts of money that he has now. But Warren Buffett as well, because we were talking about, I think you and I were talking about the interview with Warren Buffett's son.
Oh, it was on Freakonomics. I don't think you and I weren't talking about it, but I have heard that.
Okay, yeah, it's on Freakonomics. And that's really interesting.
Yeah, and it's like he bought the house for like $30,000 and he still lives in that, and the house is pretty much unchanged since then.
And Warren Buffett's son is a musician, and his whole thing is it's like, I didn't really realize we were rich.
Because he was like shielded from, you know, because I think Warren Buffett's whole thing is that he realized how money just warps everything. And so he just sort of masked it and just didn't lie about it. But it was never like, I mean, it was just sort of like in a bank somewhere.
Yeah. He had no idea what his dad actually did for a living. But he also had no idea that they were as wealthy as they were, because they still, like I said, they still lived in that house, you know, and didn't live any kind of an extravagant lifestyle in any way.
The weird thing is you hear people talk about Bill Gates, and it's like he does live in like a house that's, you know, I mean, he basically lives in like one of those huge like underground like supervillain Jetson lairs or something. But apparently, and maybe this is a result of coming from money, but also I think it's just the fact that he's a huge nerd, that it's just like money apparently didn't change that guy very much at all. I mean, that if he wants something now, he has the ability to do it, you know, and he is able, you know, he obviously gives away a lot of money, and, you know, he has the ability to use money in a way that he thinks is advantageous, or if there's some neat idea that he wants to be able to execute. But apparently, in terms of personality, they said that he didn't change at all, that his personality was exactly the same before and after he became like a billionaire. It's not like, you know, it's not like he grew up poor, but also but they said that, you know, like years after he was a billionaire, he would go to these photo shoots and he would just be wearing a sweater that he bought like 12 years ago that had like holes in it, and he would have forgotten to shower for like the last week or so, because it was just because he didn't ever care about putting forth the image of a guy with a lot of money. And so they actually at one point had to very like sort of tactfully hire a person whose sole job was to follow him around if he was going to be interviewed, and to like whisk him away for a second and go, hold on a second, and like take the grease smudges off his eyeglasses and to take the dandruff out of his hair, because his outward a bit, like he never felt like he had to dress the part or be the part or act the part. He was just like the guy in the dirty sweater, and like always had been. So, you know, and so forth. Now, somebody sent me one of these really frustrating photo galleries from like Forbes.com about the you know, the richest people in the world. But it's one of those things where it's like a slideshow and I have to hit the arrow like 100 times. Apparently, the richest woman in the world, though, is this makes sense. Christy Waltman family, who are the Walmart folks. So she apparently is worth $26.5 billion. Let's see. I'm trying to see who number two is. France. The hell's going on in France? Let's see.
You know, French people. They have money. Apparently, Liliane Bettencourt. She owns L'Oreal. She's heir to L'Oreal.
This is weird.
Then you got Alice Walton.
I was going to say there's another Walton on the list, like way down there. Is there like a split? Is there a schism with the Waltons?
Like three.
But I mean, why aren't the Waltons all together?
Well,
what if there's some sort of, has there been some sort of a falling out?
I don't know.
Is there a Chinese wall between the two of them? Let's see. So, blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, it's all the usual suspects. You know, you know, it's Paul Allen, Steve Ballmer, George Soros.
Jacqueline Mars of M&M Mars. And also, see, like, Pedigree Pet Food. And
Phil Knight. I haven't gotten to Oprah here. So, all right. Yeah. Well, she's on the list. She's got more money than I do.
Somewhere.
That's really what matters here. Yeah. Is that she's somebody of whom I can be envious. All right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. It's 503-505-6964. Coming up today, we got your greatest songs ever made. Also, a recap of last night's season finale of House. We've got the Clergy Watch, Religious Nutcase Watch, and more. We should do let's do a few more here, and then we'll take a break on the other side.
Well, let's do that Religious Nutcase Watch first off.
I don't even know how we got into this whole thing, but anyway, so congratulations to Anna Griffin. And there you go. So isn't that awesome?
That is awesome.
And she apparently has known about that for like 3 weeks, but couldn't really tell anybody that, like, by the way, I'll be studying at Harvard.
So they cover
for
all
a year.
Of her expenses and everything, too? Are they going to put her up in a little apartment? And
I don't really know. I mean, we can just relentlessly interrogate her tomorrow about that because, I mean, really, let's be honest. I mean, it's not like she'll probably deign to speak to us again after this. So, I mean, we might as well just, you know, make hay while the sun is shining. And this, even with all like the penis and the nail gunning and the cannibal and the corpse and the whatever thing that we subjected her to, that did not taint or stain her enough to make her undesirable. She was able to survive this.
She says she's coming back to Portland, though, but will she come back here?
I would imagine that's probably not true.
No.
I imagine that she'll just wave to us as she flies over on her way to a better life. That's what I'd do. I mean, honestly.
And then she comes back here and we're like, so Annie, coming on the show? Oh, I'm busy.
Yeah. Let's see. What are we doing here?
Religious night.
Here's your religious. She'll come back the way. Was it Luke Perry that came back to like 90210 or something? But it was like, but he would just come back during sweeps week or something. And he would just like, they would see him at the mall or something for like 5 minutes. That's what she'll do. You know? But it won't be here. It'll be, it'll be with like Ketzel Levine or somebody. Here is your religious nutcase watch for Tuesday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here is your religious nutcase watch for Tuesday.
Aaron Ruttenberg of New York is recovering at Westchester Medical Center with burns on 50% of his body. His family says the pain is excruciating. He was burned when he and his son wrestled with a would-be arsonist who at 4 a.m. on Sunday placed flammable rags on Ruttenberg's wooden back porch and tried to light them. This was in New Square, New York. 4 hours later, cops arrested Shaul Spitzer, 18, who lives nearby. He had burns on his hands, and he was charged with arson, attempted murder, and assault. Ruttenberg's wife and daughters were at home sleeping when his son saw on security cameras there was a man in the backyard. They could have died in the fire, according to the police and the victim's son-in-law. Moshe Elbaum, the victim's son-in-law, said Ruttenberg's problems began after he started a prayer group in the Friedwald Center instead of the main synagogue of the Skver Hasidim, a block away. Elbaum said that last year the rabbi of the synagogue, David Twersky, announced that no one should pray outside of the main synagogue. That day, Rottenberg's car windows were broken, then his house windows, then 100 people chanted outside his home, "Aaron Ruttenberg, leave the neighborhood."
Where was this?
In New Square, New York.
Okay, I'm confused. So this was at a synagogue. Was it two different synagogues, or was it like, is this like the white zone is for loading and unloading only? Like he was in the wrong part.
No, he was having a prayer group. He was having a prayer group at a community center,
not at the synagogue,
and not at the synagogue.
I see. Okay.
The rabbi apparently was threatened.
Not
by
for
this.
You. The praying at the rec center.
Yeah, and preached to his congregation that this was wrong, and so then they started breaking this guy's windows. 100 people were outside chanting they need to leave the room. And then this 18-year-old kid firebombed his porch.
Why always the firebombing?
Police acknowledge these incidents occurred but have made no arrests in any of them. They also said they have no known motive for Sunday's attempted firebombing.
Except for, you know, craziness.
Yeah, cops said Spitzer, who will be arraigned from his hospital bed, would not speak to them.
Here's the thing, and you know, and this is just based on my own experience, but this here's why the story is surprising is because, and again, just you know, just based on the 30 odd whatever years that I've 38 years that I've spent on the terra firma, Like, that is a thing that you do experience with some regularity. Like, if you're hanging out with, I mean, not that I hang out with Pentecostals, but, you know, like, if you, you know, but it's like if you end up in some Christian prayer group, or if you know people who are like, you know, like have the real fiery born again, like serpent handling sort of faith. But it's like all, you know, it's not like I've known like a ton of rabbis or anything in my life, but it's like those that I have known, they're always just like, the great thing about it is like, they're just so laissez-faire about the whole thing.
Yeah, Jews tend to be a whole lot more of like, you don't believe what we believe? Okay, so what?
Well, I'm like, you know, okay then, you know, whatever, you know, and I would just say making them all sound like Shicky Green,
yeah.
But it's because you have to, but I would just, especially when I was like in my 20s, I would feel the need to like really aggressively inform people about my faith or lack thereof and be like, I'm Jewish. And I go, I'm not, nor am I anything else. I'm my own, you know, and I would be real aggro about it. And they would just go like, well, okay, shall we go to lunch? And that was sort of the end of it. It is a thing, though, that I got to tell you, though, it does seem to be a regional thing in some ways, that it's like the further east or like south you get. I think as long as you're staying in the Northwest, although here you have to worry about Nazis. So, I mean, it's really, I guess it's 601. But I mean, really, it seems like if you're going, like if you're looking at a map, if you start going like down or right, or God forbid you're going down into the right diagonally, you're getting to like real, it's like Crazyville there in terms of, you know, praying in a slightly different prone position or in a building that is not quite, not quite like ours. And so therefore the bombing.
Yeah, but you don't expect upstate New York.
No.
I mean, this was like outside of White Plains.
No.
This is like, it's like, you're not at our synagogue. You're praying somewhere else. Okay, we'll try to kill you.
Is this a thing where, like, his brother has the parking concession at the synagogue or whatever, and he's just like, they're losing out?
Well, this place, to be fair, well, not to be fair, but for more explanation, New Square is a Hasidic Jewish village.
So they would be the extreme version. They would have a more an intensified version of
But still, firebombing seems a little, and window breaking does seem to be a
seems beyond the pale.
Little
really, it seems like you're over making the point.
Yeah,
is what you're doing there. All right, there you go. There's your religious nutcase watch. Hey, by the way, so you remember yesterday when I said that I was talking about about going to the Roger Klein show and how I met the guy Larry and Paul, and then a man that everybody calls Wookie, and the guy Larry was like, he was putting on Twitter like, you know, I'm at the Roger Klein show, you know, just met Rick Emerson, like three songs in, best show ever, and whatever. And then I mentioned that I walked to the bathroom and to get some water and came back, and then later on Twitter there was like the woman who had put on Twitter, she's like, it was, you know, my imaginary BFF, you know, at Rick Emerson just walked by. And then I said yesterday that I, you know, I felt like I was creeping her out or I was being weird or whatever. So this is a thing that I didn't expect. So then I saw this morning from the same woman. And she's just sort of tweeting this to everybody. I don't even know. It's just odd. She just says, at Rick Emerson is adorable. He thinks he can creep me out. Obviously, he doesn't know my creepy husband. So that's weird.
Yeah, that is weird.
And so, like,
why would you call your husband creepy?
That's my thing too. Is like, and I'm not saying that she in turn is creepy. I'm just saying maybe. But that's the thing. Is the husband known to be creepy? Is it? This is the like when you, the lack of sarcasm really does come to the fore in terms of internet communications.
I'm confused by this thing of saying the at symbol before you say the name for Twitter because.
Well, I'm just saying as it's written.
Well, I know, but Sabrina Miller does the same thing on Suck It over on Cascadia when she tells everyone during the show how you can find them at Twitter. She goes, you know, and I'm at Sabrina PDX and Robert's at Rob Wet, but the at is really just a symbol to designate this is your Twitter name. It just seems odd to say it out loud.
As a character, it is part of the handle. It is.
Yeah.
It is part of the...
When you're saying what a hashtag is, you don't say hashtag blah, 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 blah.
No, but a hashtag doesn't identify a particular person. In other words, it is not... I mean, that is just a designation. That is not an actual name or a title.
But it is a symbol in front of the
right, but
the
it's not. But it's not a title, is my point. It's not... I mean, it doesn't matter to me. Use it, don't use it. But I'm just saying that's why. It's the same. I mean, you know, if there was an apostrophe there, you'd use the apostrophe.
Well, just think, because on Facebook, if you want to type someone's name who's on Facebook
right.
and have it be a link and have them tagged, you type the @ and then their name, and then it brings up your thing, and then you choose it. But the @ disappears.
Right. So, well, that's because that's Facebook and not Twitter.
I know, but it just... yeah.
And the other reason you do that... well, I mean, are you talking about...
I understand it's a designation. It just seems weird to say it.
Well, but the other reason doing it is because it's linguistic shorthand. Because how else would you say it?
You just say the name. When you're reading the thing from her, it said, you know, I just saw my BFF Rick Emerson. That
right, but if you, but you're the whole thing of like, you know, because Lisa does this on CNN. She'll say, I'm Lisa D. CNN, you know, on Twitter. How would you say that if you drop the @?
I'd just say that.
But like, give me an example.
I'm DawnTaylor666 on Twitter. I wouldn't say I'm @ DawnTaylor666 on Twitter.
I think it's that the @ gives it, because it's an open vowel sound, I think it gives it a sort of a flow. I think that's the thing. I think that's why people have fallen into doing it. I think it's if you say, I'm @ Dawn, as opposed to I'm Dawn, because what happens is you've got two closed syllables or two closed letters there in terms of pronunciation. And because vowels are sort of like a lubricant linguistically, that they allow consonants to flow into one another more easily. And so by putting an @ there, it actually allows those three words to go together much more smoothly. That would be my guess, that nobody consciously thought that out. But my guess is that that is why somebody started doing it. And then it just it became the way that people say it, because it is smoother to pronounce.
Because I didn't know I have no idea how widespread it is to say that, because I don't have a lot of conversations
with
people.
I hear people say that a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you're only the second person I've heard say it. But like I said, I don't have a lot of actual verbal conversations about Twitter names.
No, but on podcasts, that's how I typically hear it said that way on podcasts. Lisa was the first one because again, I didn't listen to a lot of podcasts up until recently, just because I was just sort of overwhelmed by, you know, how many there were. And so I just, you know, I had just sort of put off trying to figure out which ones to listen to. I started listening to Lisa's, and she was the first person who said, I'm @ Lisa D. CNN. And then they do it at Cascadia, and then every now and again, what's his name, Dubden, will say it on Freakonomics. He'll say, you know, we're @ Freakonomics. And here's the other thing about saying we're @ Freakonomics. Depending on who you are, it also doubles as a very shorthand way of giving your URL or your domain name for your webpage.
So it's kind of like saying www. Or saying like 1-800, et cetera, even though you don't really have to anymore, because people should be able to figure that out.
Well,
like with an 800 number, you don't have to say 1-800. Everybody knows you dial 1 before you dial 800. Same thing with, you know, a web address. If you say rickemerson.com, you don't have to say www. But often people do.
Well, I think the other reason that's different is because You no longer have to type www. You have to type the @ is the thing. If you just type in, like, if I try to send a message to you on Twitter and I just type Dawn Taylor, even if that, I mean, that's not, you know, if I type Dawn Taylor 666 or Rick Emerson, it's not going to go. I think if you drop the @, it doesn't send. So I think that's the other argument for saying @, is because if someone is new to Twitter, you know, like if you just came to Twitter and you didn't know better, why would you think you had to use the, and why do you have to use the @ while we're talking about it? I mean,
because that designates that's their Twitter handle.
Well, see, so there you go.
Yeah.
So it is a required thing. But if you were just joining to, like on Facebook, you don't have to put like ampersand Dawn Taylor.
Yeah, but if you're looking at if you're looking at your Twitter feed, if you're looking at whether it's a client or even just your Twitter feed, when it lists everyone's names, it doesn't say @ that name. It only says that you only use that within the body of the text of your tweet.
But if I wanted to send you, like if I told my mom, you know, my mom says, I love that Dawn Taylor. How can I tell her so? And I say, well, she's usually on Twitter, so get an account and send her a message. My mom would have no idea that to send you a direct message, she had to type @. Because on Facebook, you don't, right? Like on Facebook, she can just type Dawn Taylor and it pops up your name. And it auto completes or whatever. On Twitter, as we've discovered over and over and over again, if you type in Dawn Taylor, the odds are you're never going to come. I'll never find you using the search. And so there is no way for new users, I think. This is the other argument for it. It's required as opposed to like the www. There is no other way that users would just instinctively know you had to put @. Especially because that is the thing that you associate with email addresses, and Twitter is not email. So I think that has to stay there because it has to stay there. So,
yet another wonky, wonky thing that we beat into a paste.
No, because I'd never really thought about it, though. And I was thinking, I'd never really pondered why people do that. But now, the more I think about it, it is because it's not just a thing of linguistic whatever or the way it appears. It is actually functional because if you drop it, it won't work. You know, like you can say again, like you can just type 800 contacts or whatever and it'll work. You no longer have to type the one. The at is not like any of those other examples. The at is alone in that it must be included. The and even like your Twitter clients, they don't assume the at. Like they won't insert it for you. You do have to put it there. And there may be, you know, we may come a, there may come a time when you don't have to do that. Like I said today, like Twitter actually bought TweetDeck today. So they may start consolidating all that stuff under one roof. But you know who I feel sorry for? I was just thinking about this. We might as well just this is just a big nerd segment, so we'll just do this and then we'll do a thing. You know who I feel sorry for? I feel sorry for those people at Tiny URL, because now that there are much, much tinier URLs, Tiny URL seems huge now.
Yeah.
Because there's like the Bitly and there's the T.co and then like Google has one and Amazon has one. Like everybody has their own. Like Yahoo has one. And Tiny URL now when I use it, it just seems massive. I'm like, this is gargantuan.
I still think that they missed a very obvious marketing thing when they did not create a mascot for themselves named Tiny Earl. And he's like just a little tiny guy in like overalls. They're but like, we've hey, I'm Tiny Earl.
I think we've established that you're the only one that says Earl, though. I think that would have confused everyone else. I don't think anybody else would have gotten it.
I don't think it would have confused people. I thought, look, Tiny Earl.
I think that the shortest one they said the shortest one that is possible is that was available was the T.co, which I think is the one that Twitter has. So Twitter has their own. But yeah, the Tiny URL people, that must have seemed like a really, really great company that I hope they sold maybe like at their first opportunity because they held on to it. They're probably not going to be able to conjure up a lot of money for that at this point. By the way, somebody wants to know that Stedman is trending. So there you go.
Aww.
You know what else is trending? I just saw the weirdest thing. You know what else is trending? Maybe this is a reference to something. Itty Bitty Picky.
Really?
I don't know why. I don't know why that is trending. Itty Bitty Piggy.
Itty Bitty Piggy.
Okay, at the risk of being this guy, can I... And here's the thing. I'm going to do two things simultaneously. I'm going to clear up a bit of ignorance on my part. And also, I'm going to go back to your thing of comparing the hashtag. Even though we've established why you have to use the at... Mm-hmm. If I can just go back and just underscore my point once more, you said you were making the observation that people don't say hashtag, you know, so why would they say at? But that raises another issue. Do you have to use the hashtag? I mean, why? Stuff trends that doesn't have a hashtag. Itty Bitty Piggy doesn't have a hashtag. It's trending.
No, I don't think you have to for something to trend. You just have to do it for every post that has that hashtag and that particular symbol to be categorized and filed together under that hashtag.
That's not true, because I just clicked on Itty Bitty Piggy, which is not hashtag, and it brought up every post that is mentioning that.
Okay. I don't know.
I'm just saying, I just don't... There must be a reason. I just don't know why. Trending without a hashtag, Paramore Monster.
Yeah.
Glee Tour in Brazil. I just don't know. Hashtag thing...
Maybe those are things that are... They've paid for it, because those all seem to be businessy things. So they may have all.
But zombie apocalypse was trending the other day, and that's not a business thing.
Yeah.
So was Rapture, and I mean that's a business for that guy, but not in general. So I think maybe the hashtag at this point is just decorative. Maybe it's just there to imply that that Tara's typing something snarky.
No, maybe.
Not that that would ever be needed. All right, we should take a break. We'll come back. Wait, are we breaking? Are we in the middle of a watch or something right now?
No, we're not. Okay. I just, you know, we can break if you like.
Well, how about we break so I can get myself a refreshing beverage. We'll come back and let's see what we got. We'll do the house recap. We'll do the greatest songs ever made. In fact, I'll do the greatest songs ever made into this break.
Right.
I'll do the greatest songs ever made. We'll play the song, get a beverage, come back. We got house. We got the watches to do. We got you singing, you dancing, you hey hey. So that is all of that is on the way. Possibly not the dancing. Maybe the singing, but probably not. So we've got all that stuff coming up and so forth. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when we'll be joined by Ms. Anna Griffin in the studio. And then Thursday, our good friend Siegfried, he'll be talking about the Zombie Film Festival, which is happening this Friday, the 27th at the Hollywood Theater. It's going to be Demons and Night of the Comet back-to-back, one night only, no waiting. And then Saturday, Zombie Game Day at Guardian Games. Find out more about all that at mayofthedead.com. It is mayofthedead.com. And Cheryl wants to note, rather morbidly, that Dead Baby was trending for most of yesterday. I don't think the dead baby stuff was trending. I think it was that we were probably, it was doing it in a passive voice. Why would dead baby be trending yesterday? Was there some sort of a, is that one of the new, is that some new rock and roll group that the kids are listening to?
I don't think so.
You know, here's the thing. Take it, I don't want to know. I withdraw, I recuse, don't tell me. I would prefer, I'm just going to choose blissful ignorance there. I don't want to know why dead baby was trending, for the love of God. All right, on that note, we're going to take a little break. Back after this, you're listening to the Rick Emerson Show. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
I'm Rick Emerson, and these are the greatest songs ever made. Writing a tribute is a thankless task. You're almost never the first to address whatever or whoever your subject is. You may be one of thousands, depending on the object of your tribute. Another lackluster 3-minute collection of maudlin platitudes rushed out to cash in on someone's death, or a wedding, or a disaster, possibly a disastrous wedding. Such was the challenge that awaited the writer of today's song. The delicate, subtle, and almost stealthy way in which he tied together not one, not two, but three different tributes into one recording is itself a tribute to his songwriting prowess and the unorthodox way in which he approached the composition. For today's song accomplishes a wondrous feat, elevating, or one might say finally acknowledging, the life and work of an earlier times legend while giving proper due to a more recent icon. Between the two, a fleeting reference to the third subject, who exists as a sort of shadow, another myth in a hall of lost heroes that fill today's song. Today's track wins further points, by the way, for not aping the songwriting or performing style of either of the two musicians that it salutes. Instead, using a fusion of the author's own artistic bent with an orchestral midsection and coda by Philip Glass, by the way, all of it merging in a style that is spooky and haunting, morose, beautiful, loving, all of it perfectly balanced as a praising homily and bittersweet elegy all at once. So listen, as the song begins as one thing, ends as another, but does justice to them both and more. One of the greatest tributes ever recorded, it's one of the greatest songs ever made. This is Paul Simon and the late great Johnny Ace on the Rick Emerson radio program.
I was reading a magazine and thinking of a rock and roll song. The year was 1954 and I hadn't been playing that long when a man came on the radio and this is what he said. He said, I hate to break it to his fans, but Johnny Ace is dead. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I really wasn't such a Johnny Ace fan, but I felt bad all the same. So I sent away for his photograph and I waited till it came. It came all the way from Texas with a sad and simple face. And they signed it on the bottom from the late, great Johnny Ace. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Thank you. and the music was flowing, amazing and blowing my way. On a cold December evening, I was walking through the Christmas time when a stranger came up and asked me if I had heard John Lennon die. And the two of us went to this bar and we stayed to close the flames. And every song we played was for the late great Johnny Ace.
Hi, hello. This is Rick. I don't know why I've decided to use a version of this song that was encoded at like 2. So I'm just going to turn that off, and I'm going to find the higher quality version of that song and play that now. So this will all be removed, and I know it's a total fail on my part. That'll be removed in post. That was all right. There you go. That was the 14.4 version of the song. But we can upgrade now. All right, we'll try this again. Better? No, I think that's the same version again. Well, now it's become like a quest. Now it's a thing. Now it's a thing that I must get done. Hold on a second. All right. Yes. This is what your 32 cents buys you. By the way, it purchases these candid moments where you understand that even Rick Emerson is human. And I know it's difficult to grasp that mistakes might be made. On this side of the microphone, it doesn't. It doesn't even seem possible, and yet I'm here to tell you that it is so. All right. Shall we try this again? One more time here. Hold on. Wait, and... Wait.
Sure. day. It's getting faster. Everyone said, go ahead and ask her. A love like yours will surely come my way. Hey.
Alright then, it is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. By the way, Thomas Gill came on and helpfully noted that the entire show is compressed down to like 32 K per second mono anyway. Mm-hmm. So it really didn't matter. It's just one of those things that was going to bug me. I'm still going to take it all out in post.
Yeah. So the people who are listening right now have no idea what you're talking about.
No.
No.
Well, they might. People listening right now. People yeah. listening in the future now.
Right.
People not listening now, yes. People listening then now, no.
But the future now, which to them is now, there's something missing that they didn't hear.
Who?
The future now, people.
Yes, the
which
future
is,
now.
Which is this? Which then. Is there now?
Yes, the future then.
It's not the now for the actual now, people. For the future now, people. This is the now.
This is like some retarded. Stephen Hawking by way of David Mamet, sort of, yes, the future, no, sort of a thing. But he says, I'm listening live and I have no idea what he's talking about. Excellent. That's exactly how we want it, sir. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505. See, as long as we see, then everybody's equal. Then we're all on the same page if we're all confused. It's 503-505-6964. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's see, what do we got there? We got your house recap coming up. We did Greatest Songs Ever Made just then. We got the recap of last night's episode of House. We have still a Clergy Watch to get to, and more news from Don Taylor.
So
hey, look, that's Don Taylor right there.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
So I do have a special little news story here that, in the spirit that a Darwin Watch should be about... how we are cleansing the gene pool
yes.
of people who voluntarily take themselves out of the equation because they're idiots. This is a Darwin Watch.
Okay, so this is your little ad hoc Darwin Watch for you on Tuesday here in the Rick Emerson Radio program.
I'm feeling some bad stuff is about to go down.
Don't! I ate all my caps.
Don't!
My parents won't let me use scissors.
Don't!
Another one bites the dust.
Don't!
Another one bites the dust. And another one gone, and another one gone. Another one bites the dust, hey.
Ow! My heart just stopped. Ah, there it goes.
Here's your Darwin Watch for Tuesday.
So Harold Camping, the 89-year-old leader whose study of the Bible convinced him and his followers that the world would end, and then was flabbergasted that it didn't happen, and then hid for a while, and then said, oh, it's really going to happen in 5 months. Well, you know, that happened. He and his followers have tried to figure out what went wrong, and the failed prophecy, however, did more than just damage his credibility, which he had. It's also caused death and serious injury to a number of true believers. A California woman named Lynn Benedetto was one of millions who heard Camping's message and became concerned that her daughters would suffer terribly in the coming apocalypse. She allegedly forced her daughters, 11 and 14, to lie on a bed and cut their throats with a box cutter.
This is more of a religious nutcase watch.
A little bit. She then tried to kill herself, although she was arrested. A man in Taiwan killed himself on May 5th ahead of the rapture by jumping out of a building. He had heard that doomsday was imminent and had taken recent earthquakes and tsunamis as early warning signs. There were other unconfirmed reports of doomsday-related suicides around the world. This is not the first time that failed doomsday predictions led to tragedy. The most famous case, of course, was in 97 with the Heaven's Gate Christian UFO group. Camping's failure holds an important cautionary lesson, according to this, because doomsday predictions are not going away. Many people, especially those in the New Age community, believe that 2012 will bring global cataclysm. So Benjamin Radford of the Skeptical Inquirer wrote about this and said, "It's easy to dismiss and ridicule failed prophets as modern-day harmless Chicken Littles misleading the gullible, but apocalyptic visions can have deadly consequences."
Seriously, we should be getting on that 2012 money right now. Because there's going to be a lot of jockeying for position as we get closer. And it's like, you don't want to be a Johnny come lately to that, because then you're not going to get, nobody will have anything left to donate to the cause of righteousness. So we need to start soliciting for money from believers like tomorrow. Because we're already, we're like halfway through 2000. When is it happening in 2012?
I don't know.
Well, is it when? It's not just like at the stroke of midnight or something.
Well, no.
Is it like December or something, or like November? When is the is it the Mayans?
Well, we'll just
the Aztecs.
When apocalypse?
No, that's you're going to get many results from that.
2012. We'll see.
You should hit the I feel lucky button.
I'm not sure they have a specific date. They just keep saying.
No, that's not true. The Mayan calendar is very specific. I just don't know on what the actual date is. Oh wait, it's December 21st.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. Which is, I believe. Is that the shortest day of the year? I think it's the solstice. I think December 21st is in fact, the solstice. I believe that is the shortest day of the year. And so, again, I don't know if that's, like, Pacific Standard Time or whatever, but apparently it's December 20th. So as long as we get it done by, like, the end of the 20th, because the next day the jig will presumably be partially or entirely up. So we got to start collecting, like today.
I am a little bit fascinated by the guy, and I'm sure there were a number of people who did this, who kill themselves because the rapture is coming. Because I guess, on the one hand, they believe all of this. They're a Christian nut bar who believes in the rapture. But they apparently are not enough of a Christian nut bar to have followed enough of the precepts of their own religion that they feel, you know, that they're going to get a slot.
Well, it's like when the regional manager comes, you know, and it's like, you don't want to be fired, so you just quit. You know, I don't want to be excoriated in front of my coworkers. F that. I'm just going to go to lunch and then get on a bus. You know, I mean, why stick around and just be yelled at?
That's just the laziest sort of crazy. I mean, you believe in something, but you don't apparently believe enough in it to actually follow the rules.
Well, you could argue that they did not, that they were aware that they had a true, in their own universe, that they had a true sense of their own shortcomings, that they had an accurate sense of themselves and a perception of themselves within their sort of crazy world to know that they were not righteous. They had no delusions that they were righteous or pious enough to be taken with the heavenly host.
So it's kind of like
they're doing God's work for him.
Crazy with low self-esteem.
Well, just, you know, or crazy with a normal self-esteem. I mean, if one assumed, in other words, if God, if one assumed that God was actually true, you know, and that he was only going to take, in other words, if all of this was actually real and he was going to come to take 1% of the population of the most righteous and holy into heaven, as biblically defined, clearly we wouldn't make the cut, and it would be delusional to think that we would. I mean, just the law of mathematics alone says that you probably wouldn't make the cut. So I would say it would be far crazier to stick around and think that you were actually going to be taken up with God. Really, within the sphere of that frame of belief, it is far more logical to believe that you're not—I mean, what's the point? You're not making it anyway, so I might as well just skip to the end of the page right where I'm dead.
And I suppose it's possible that the guy, like, really tried really, really hard to be righteous and then just had a few slips and thought that maybe those were enough, that we're going to—like, he'd have enough black marks that he wouldn't like.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point you figure, like, this is like when the Mets are, you know, like, behind by 17 and a half games or something. It's like, mathematically, there's just no—there's no coming back from that, Don. All right, there you go. Well, we'll just—we will move directly into—let's do one more. We'll do the House discussion, and then we'll get some other stuff taken care of on the other side of that.
Okay. Officials in Florida are investigating a weekend incident in which a woman apparently fired an AR-15 rifle at a target inside her future ex-husband's master bedroom closet, missing the target and blasting holes in a washing machine.
Excellent. And this is in Florida, by the way.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
When deputies on Sunday entered the home, they found a lot of water on the floor covering most of the residence, according to recently released St. Lucie County Sheriff's Office records. The 21-year-old woman said she and her husband are divorcing. She said her 33-year-old spouse called her on Saturday asking if they could get together. They had a good evening, she said.
So wait a minute. They were separated. They were getting a divorce. And she said she invited him to get together?
He called her and asked if they could get together.
And this is like get together for old lang syne and, you know.
So she said they had a good evening, uh-huh. And I think we know what that means.
Oh, yeah.
But started arguing on Sunday about reconciling. She said she told her husband she didn't want to get back together because she has a new boyfriend. She said her husband went crazy and started shooting indoors. She said he was firing close to her and thought he was trying to scare her. She said blood on her legs came from the bullets hitting the washing machine and the metal shards hitting her. The woman, however, also said she was shooting with her husband.
I'm confused.
Well, asked to write a sworn statement, that's when she said, "I'll try my best, but I'm drunk."
Awesome.
Investigators found 223 caliber and 45 caliber cartridge casings in the master bedroom and a wooden metal shooting target in the closet. Bullet holes riddled the washing machine, and bullet exit holes were spotted in the wall across from the washing machine. A deputy learned they'd been in the bedroom shooting the target in the closet. They had done this on multiple occasions, a report states, noting that both had been drinking. The husband said he was cooking on the grill outside. His wife was inside, and he ran in when he heard the shots. He said he observed water all over the floor and learned his wife had shot the assault rifle. He apparently wasn't aware. He couldn't hear that she was shooting an assault rifle in the house while he was outside barbecuing.
I am no closer to understanding anything in the story than I was at the beginning. I think I actually knew more before you started reading the story.
He said that's when he started arguing with his wife, was when he saw she had been shooting at things and shot the washing machine, and he yelled at her and told her to get out. One neighbor said he and his wife heard loud music coming from the home, but said that wasn't unusual. He heard pops that sounded like gunshots, but suspected they were fireworks. 10 minutes later, the neighbor said he saw the husband grilling in the driveway. The neighbor noted 4 or 5 more shots coming from the house as the husband grilled. The husband raced inside, and deputies soon showed up.
This must have been a sizable house, by the way, if you were just, they're just firing automatic weapons, whatever.
And into the closet.
Into the closet, and it's not causing any trouble, really, for anybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, it must be a roomy residence.
Yeah, and then when the police arrived, they were watching the husband, and they were talking about the arguing, and then the wife grabbed the gun from the safe and started shooting and punching holes in the walls. I guess that was when they were arguing, and then the house flooded.
I really think that they're doing all of humanity a disservice by getting divorced. I think it is probably irresponsible to allow them to date other people at this point. They should probably only be allowed to date themselves.
Yeah, the wife left saying that a ride was coming to pick her up. The report states, these are the actual last two lines, by the way, of this news story. The report states, both parties were advised to stay away from each other.
Yeah.
It wasn't immediately clear what the husband was grilling.
That's fantastic. That's just Cracker Jack reporting and writing is what that is. That's great. By the way, speaking of that, let me read one more thing, actually, before we do the House Watch. So Sarah mentioned this to us yesterday, but I don't think we actually ever covered it. She was kind enough to post this on good God, what is this? This is also, oh, this is North Carolina. This isn't even Florida. So she mentioned this to us yesterday, and we forgot to read it, but then she was kind enough to post it on my Facebook page. This is Dateline, Gastonia, North Carolina. Ooh. Police in North Carolina said they arrested a man accused of exposing himself to a fast food worker because the restaurant had run out of chicken legs. Investigators said Jason Gross, 32, of Gastonia, was a passenger in a minivan going through the Bojangles drive-thru lane May 16th when the female driver, so he was a passenger, female driver, ordered a chicken leg dinner. The Gaston Gazette, Gastonia. So the name, except Gazette is capitalized. This doesn't make any sense. I know it's North Carolina. The Gaston Gazette, capitalized, comma, Gastonia, reported Monday.
Yeah.
Gazette isn't a proper noun here in this sentence, though, so I don't know why it's... I guess I'm...
Well, really... it would be if that's the name of the newspaper, Gazette.
No, but it's Gaston Gazette, comma, Gastonia.
Well, yeah, the Gaston Gazette is the name of the newspaper, and it's in Gastonia.
No, but see, you are not listening to me. Listen to this now. When the female driver ordered chicken leg dinner... The Gaston Gazette, comma, Gastonia, comma, reported Monday. The placement of the commas indicates that the name of... The Gazette is an identifying noun, not a proper noun.
I think what it's saying is the name of the... I'm sending
you the link right now, and you'll see that I'm right about this. Hold on a second. Just give me a second. If for no other reason, then it gives me a chance to show pony.
It's awkward, but I don't think it's incorrect.
Let's see. Link... Read this. All right. Okay, look at that and tell me if that seems wrong. I'm going to move on. I'm not going to pretend that this actually has anything to do. Now I have to go back and read the paragraph again.
Yeah, okay.
Investigators said Jason Gross, 32, was a passenger in the minivan going through the Bojangles drive-thru lane May 16th when the female driver ordered a chicken leg dinner, the Gaston Gazette, Gastonia, reported Monday. Employee Jacqueline Green said Gross became enraged when she told enraged, when she told him the restaurant was out of chicken legs and shouted at her with profanity before declaring, quote, I've got a leg for you, end quote, and exposing his genitals. He did it gradually, Green said. And then, have you seen the thing?
I'm looking at it.
Okay,
right
what's
now.
what's your verdict before I continue with the story?
I think it makes sense, but it's awkward.
And they've already said it like five times. It's in Gastonia, plus the dateline is in Gastonia. So
it may, that may just be a mistake.
I think that's just wrong. Yeah. But here's the best part about it. So the best part of the story is not even when he... This is the great thing, and I've never been a print journalist. You have. So it must be great when you see things like this, and you get to do that onion. It's like a real-life onion reporting of taking something horrible or hilarious and putting it into the wooden journalistic dialogue and... became enraged when she told him the restaurant is out of chicken legs and shouted at her with profanity before declaring he had, quote, a leg for you, end quote, and exposing his genitals. He did it gradually, Green said, quote, it's going to be forever ingrained in my head, end quote. Must be a heck of a leg. Green and the restaurant's manager took down the license plate number of the minivan. He turned himself into police and was released on an unsecured bond.
I'm fascinated by the idea that he exposed his genitals gradually.
That's the thing. And yet it's forever ingrained in her head because apparently it was transfixing as well.
She couldn't look away.
His leg was hypnotizing. She was just completely bewitched by it. How would you gradually, unless gradual just means that like you had to actually unbutton your pants.
Yeah, you have to unbuckle your belt and then undo the button and then do the zip and pull it down and then reach in. I mean, there are steps involved.
They're not tearaway pants.
No.
I mean, it's like, you
know. Of course it's gradually.
I mean, yeah, you have to unzip.
Maybe it was actually faster than she thinks, but it was one of those things where time slowed.
No.
Zip.
Thump.
Yeah.
That's the sound his penis makes, by the way.
Right.
Also fascinating about this, not just the I've got a leg for you, which is awesome, and not just the gradual exposing of his genitals, which is going to be, quote, forever ingrained in her head, not unlike 9/11, is the related stories. The related stories here, we have neighbor pitches fuss over feces. Woman exposes breasts at school. What is going on in North Carolina? Man exposes self to elderly woman. Man arrested for sex chats from office. I mean, there's something really... The fuss over feces story is the one that's really...
Oh, yeah, I saw that one this morning. I actually decided not to...
No, I'm not.
That's
one
I'm thinking
of.
That's unpleasant. I decided not to read that one.
So, all right. Well, there you go. So, it's apparently there's a lot of weirdness going on in North Carolina. I'd just stay away from that part of the country if I were you. All right. Oh, by the way, okay, so apparently the deal is the Gaston Gazette is one paper. Gastonia is the website, that is the that is a subset. It is a subsection of the paper itself. So the Gastonia is actually sort of a boutique part of the Gaston Gazette.
So the
In other words, the Oregonian Metro.
Yeah. So the comma shouldn't be there. It shouldn't be Gaston Gazette, comma Gastonia. It should be the Gaston Gazette Gastonia.
I guess, maybe. I mean, if it's a proper noun, I don't know. I mean, if it's not like it's saying lifestyle or sports, it'd be like saying if the sports section was called, like, having a ball.
It's just
badly written.
It's just bad. Yeah, you'd it would have been better to say the Gaston Gazette website or the Gaston Gazette, you know, weblog or
something.
I think
maybe we're reading too much into this, given that it's North Carolina.
No, it's awkwardly written.
And see, somebody's just saying it should be a slash, not a comma. And see, here's the thing is we're giving them way too much credit for, like, thinking through how to, when I think really it's just like a guide to, like, hit the wrong key on the keyboard. Or, you know, they fired the copy editor and never replaced him. So there's that. Let's see. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We thank you for joining us. I like to think that, by the way, it was her appearances on this program that helped to really push Anna Griffin over the top in terms of becoming a Nieman Fellow at Harvard.
Or it just made her want to get out of town really, really badly.
We were motivational more than anything else. Let's see. Somebody notes, by the way, that if a woman is really scarred for life after seeing a penis, the human race does seem kind of doomed.
I've never understood that. I just don't understand that at all. I also it's kind of the same thing that I don't understand people, like, just completely freaking out about their children seeing, like, you know, like someone naked or something. Because it's like, on the one hand, there are things that are inappropriate, but if you act as if something is horrible, then you're just making it into a much bigger deal than it actually is.
What could be so wrong with the? I mean, is it even if it's a crimson angry penis?
Yeah.
I mean, it really. So what?
It seems like the appropriate response to just would be just go, seriously, dude, really?
Yeah.
Put that away.
What are you gonna do? Well, in any event. Sorry. Squires Electric can be contacted at 503-252-1609. Don't ask them about angry crimson penises.
That's the name of my pirate ship, by the way.
The angry crimson penis. You can find them online at facebook.com/SquiresElectric or SquiresElectric.com, where you can read unsolicited testimonials from listeners just like yourselves. People who have, contacted them to come out and handle some sort of installation or upgrade or repair, maybe doing a pre-inspection to make sure you pass the actual inspection. These are all things that they can handle. And again, when I say don't take my word for it, take my word for it. But, I mean, if you're going to be, like, you know, an ass about it and be really difficult, if you're just going to, like, struggle and just be contrarian about the whole thing, you could go online. You could read, what some people have had to say. People who are these are not celebrity endorsers. These are not people who have been compensated for this. These are just people who have had a good experience with Squires Electric, and they want to let you know about it. And you can go to facebook.com/SquiresElectric, and it's facebook.com/SquiresElectric. And you can see some of the repair work they've done, and places that have either where they've had some sort of a fire, they've had water damage, or they've had to go through and just, take everything out and replace it with something because the house is like 150 years of age. Doesn't matter. You can get them to handle almost anything involving wires or wiring in your home or business. They are Squires Electric. And it's Squires Electric at 503-252-1609. Squires Electric. Somebody suggested it would have more punch if it were Don Taylor and the Angry Crimson Penises, by the way. That they would be like your Harlettes, They'd be backing you up there. All right. Excellent.
So my low-rent version of Storm Large and the Balls.
Exactly. That's right.
Yeah, Don Taylor and the Angry Crimson Penises.
Well, who knows? The balls themselves might be available right now.
We could do a double bill and just sort of bring the whole package together, as it were.
There you go. Let's see. Where are we going here? Let's see. All right. We'll do this. We'll talk about last night's episode of House, which was called Moving On. It was episode.
And so we are.
And so shall. Yes, seriously. So say Dawn and I, at least. Episode 23, season 7 of House. And I'm saying for me, I'm. Insert, I thought about doing like a Pulling the Plug or, like Flatline or Extraordinary Measures or, whatever. I'm done. I'm finished. But I will say this. So here's it. Before we get to the actual episode itself, so last night was Lisa Edelstein, who plays Cuddy, she's leaving the show, and last night was her final appearance on the program. And I put something on Twitter last night, about halfway through the episode, where I typed, I said, tonight's, and this is why it was interesting that it got retweeted by somebody who's a fan. I said, tonight's House breaks new ground, : I'm rooting for everyone to die. The patient, House, Cuddy, the writers, myself, everyone. You know, ha ha, wah wah. And then I hit enter and it goes online. And then later, I see that somebody has retweeted it and it's, you know, so and so. And she put like a, and she retweeted it with a ha ha ha, like laughy, open mouth laugh face emoticon thing. And then she retweeted it. And I thought, well, who is this woman who retweets me with an open mouth clown laugh? And then I went to her site and her name is I don't know, Marina or something like that. She's in Buenos Aires, Argentina. It's everything about her Twitter profile. In fact, everything about her as a person seems to revolve around Lisa Edelstein. So I'm looking here, and she is. And the reason I mention this is because she's part of this whole. I never really thought about things like this existing on Twitter, where it's just these tiny enclaves of people, of Twitter users, whose sole purpose in having the Twitter account is to, like, just fetishize, like, Ron Palillo or somebody. So you go to her profile, and it says Marina Lopez is her name. And then, you know, where it has the description, you can give the quote about yourself. And the quote is, live, laugh, love. And then it says, with at Lisa Edelstein. So apparently you were supposed to do those. And I wondered, I was looking to see if she was related or if she was, like, a friend. Apparently she's just a huge fan. So her advice for you in your existence is to live and laugh and love with Lisa Edelstein, if at all possible, like legally.
Sure, why not?
And then she links to a photo gallery that is nothing but photos of Lisa Edelstein. And then it was like, if you're interested in this, you might like related, you know, like Twitters and Twitter feeds and whatever. And then it just, and I clicked on that, and it was just like hundreds of people whose Twitter usernames and profile picture, whatever, are all just various pictures of Lisa Edelstein. And so it makes me wonder, does every celebrity have that?
I guess so. I mean, when I worked at the newspaper in St. Helens, we hired this girl to come in and just be a feature writer. And she was this odd little person. Like, you know, like she really was like a character out of a movie. And she, you know, lived at home with her parents and she really needed a job. And they hired her at the newspaper. And she didn't drive. So, like, her mom would drop her off to work every day. She was like 27 years old. And, she was a huge fan of Keri Russell in that...
From Felicity?
Yeah. And I mean, a huge fan. And I think, oh, that's nice. But like, apparently, no, like, you know, on like Keri Russell message boards and watched everything and it memorized everything she did and knew everything about her. And when the movie Waitress came out, I went to a screening and I got a bag of, you know, swag. There was a... And I kept a couple of books like, hey, look, you know, pie server. I could use that. And I got, but there was some, you know, some waitress-themed doodahs and doohickeys in the bag. And so I kept, like, two things out of the bag and I brought the bag to work and gave it to her. And you'd think I had given her the Hope Diamond. It was like... Oh, stuff from the Keri Russell movie.
That's awesome.
And she cradled it gently, like, you know, she might break the ceramic.
You know, it's at home surrounded by candles right now and pictures of you.
Yeah, no, but she put in her Keri Russell shrine or something. But yeah, I think I met a crazy guy once at a bar who was a friend of a friend who was like nuts about Ally Sheedy. And then he said, what do you know about Ally Sheedy? And I was like, nothing. I know nothing. And then he confided to me at some point that his therapist had told him that he needed to be a little less intense about Ally Sheedy. And when the guy I was dating came back from the bathroom, I said, you know, your friend is nuts. And he said, oh, yeah, he's... And I said, no.
He's nuts. Yeah, he's crazy.
He's like stalk somebody and then set their hair on fire crazy.
So I was just I guess it shouldn't surprise me that there's like 9 jillion people on the internet. So any, I'm not gonna say it, she doesn't seem crazy or anything. It's just it had never occurred to me that you could be that into like a specific. But then I'm looking at some of the people. So I clicked. I'm like, well, who follows her? Because I thought, well, maybe she's like related to Lisa Edelstein. Or they're like they were college roommates or something. And so I clicked on her followers, and unsurprisingly, like 90% of her followers are also people who. And maybe this is not her only Twitter. Maybe she has some other Twitter account that is, like, not for Lisa Edelstein things. Maybe she has one that's for Steve Landisberg. But, I mean, this is... But all of the people who follow her, it's all, like... And they have names like Huddy So Say We All. Huddy, of course, being, like, a confluence of House Cuddy.
They're shippers.
But, I mean, yes, exactly. But, I mean, How do you so say we all implies like a level of just... That that is a level of like
there's
exponential
levels of geekiness there. That
power
are...
dork. Yeah. And then she notes, I think rather unnecessarily, I am obsessed with House and Battlestar Galactica. And then she puts in all caps with a little like a little sort of like a little little extra font flourish. You know, Prova, what is she doing now? Still crying over the fact that Lisa Edelstein quit House. All caps. So
must make myself feel better by getting back to my Gata Wilson slash Vec.
But I mean, it's just, and it's and every like I would say of the people here that are a House or Cuddy or whatever, they, like half of them then have the Huddy sort of name in the Twitter name somewhere, and it's the whole thing started to creep me out after a while because the woman who retweeted me initially, again, she seems relatively normal and sane, and I'm into stuff and whatever. These other people kind of freak me out a little bit. So I'm just, I really have no point except to say that I wouldn't have known any of this. I don't even know how she found my tweet, except that, I mean, I tweeted about House, but 9 billion people must have been tweeting about House. It's like, how did she manage to see, like, my one thing as it went by? It's sort of impressive,
luck,
actually.
Happenstance.
I guess she drew me just, like, out of the bag. So.
Or she sent out some, because it sounded like she was just sending out a, like, ha, hee, hee, and a thing. She may have sent out some kind of a bot that just went to anyone who mentioned House.
That's possible.
Because I've come up with a couple of those under weird circumstances. You'll say something innocuous, and then somebody has a bot that if you say the word, you know, rhubarb, then they said, you like rhubarb, then you should check out this pie recipe I have over here. And you're like, why did I get the... Oh, I typed the word rhubarb. Yeah, so...
And then you see people like this, someone whose name is Huddy Heaven. And then the self little description you put the profile just says, this is the sort of thing that will never be said about me on Twitter. The self description just says, Hugh Laurie is a sex god. Deal with it. And then it links to a Tumblr account that I'm never going to click on. By the way, I'm never going there. I don't want to know what's there. I don't want to know what's because those are the
I
same.
Love Hugh Laurie. I really do. But sex god is really not a word that I would use in connection with him.
Oh God! I accidentally clicked on the link. Of course, it's just creepy pictures of Hugh Laurie. I have to close this. That's like the same people that's like, they have like...
Hugh Laurie is as a naked minotaur.
Well, don't ever say that. Don't ever say that. Not even kidding. That's because you know that that's a Rule 34 thing. Like, someone's got porn of that. Well, that's like...
Did I ever tell you about boytars.com, by the way?
No.
Oh, God. At some point, not now, but at some point you have to like Google boytars and you will be like freaked out and horrified.
Is it going
to
get me arrested?
No, but you will. But it will be one of those things where you go,
why did I look at this?
There, you know, that whole thing of anything that you can think of, there is somebody who has a thing for it. And that even things that your brain could not possibly have imagined, somebody out there has thought of, and there are a whole bunch of people who are into it.
I went through this phase years ago where I was like, I thought pregnant chicks were really hot. And it's like, you know, and I thought I was like really weird. I was like, I don't know. It's like, maybe there's something wrong with me. You know, but that was before the internet, you know, and it's like, and I think it was also because I was, I think it's because there was just this chick who was next to me when I took a voice and articulation class. There was this hot girl who sat next to me who got knocked up like halfway through the class term or whatever. And so, but she was just like a hot chick who happened to be pregnant. And I think, therefore, I just found hot pregnant... I found pregnant chicks hot for, like, 3 months because they reminded me of this girl that I wanted to pork in the class. Mm-hmm. So
well, apparently that's also fairly common because there is that whole, you know, lizard brain thing where you're like...
She's fertile.
She is fertile and her boobies are large. And,
well, that
and
was I, true. Yeah, they were immense.
Yeah.
But then once I wasn't seeing her in class every day, then it went away. So I think it was just her. But it... So I thought that was really weird, though. And I was, you know, that was in, like, 1993 or something. I was like, I don't know, maybe I'm perverse in some way. Which just shows that, like, I didn't know what the hell I would, you know.
No, you
that,
have no idea what perverse is.
But then I went on the net, and it's like, you know, and then it's just endless guys with pictures of, like, Lois from Family Guy, like, doing George Jetson.
Yeah.
Like, the Simpsons porn is what really gets me. That's the thing that is so weird. I can't even wrap my brain around guys who have, like, Marge Simpson porn.
I'm telling you, boytars.
I'm not going to go there. Not
today. Oh, you have to.
I'm going to build up to it. I'll go there tomorrow.
Okay.
Let's see. Somebody says, I'm so glad this is the last discussion about House. All right. Well, and yes, it is. So let's talk about last night's episode of House. Don Taylor.
Okay. We started with a somewhat intriguing, sort of artfully edited forward flash of something that is going to happen later in the episode. Cuddy's all angry. Wilson's arm is broken or sprained or something. Horrible things have happened. And
which it seemed like they were ripping off a little bit from Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Condensed down into one episode, to be fair. But
and Cuddy said, if you see that Greg House, you keep away from me. Restraining order, blah, blah, blah. Throw him in jail. So then you know, we go through this thing, and you know, Cuddy can't relate to people, and she can't date because she's all hung up, and she meets this guy at the coffee shop. And I wrote on Twitter at some point, I said, wow, we are 6 minutes into this episode, and I've already seen the big twist coming. And I turned out being wrong, but I was absolutely positive what was going to happen is that the coffee shop guy was going to turn out to be like some kind of crazy stalker.
Right.
And he was going to pretend he was Greg House.
Ah.
And so at the end, she was going to be telling them to put Greg House in jail if you see him. Because it would
be
that guy.
Okay.
But I was wrong. No, what
happened?
No,
they're not that creative.
No, they're not that clever. Instead, we had a disease of the week that was like a hideously like boring.
Oh, I rooted for her to die.
Self-involved.
From, like, the first scene.
Annoying person. That, of course, 13's going, she's being all artistic and creative. And you're just thinking, no, she's not. She's just horrible and irritating and deserves to die. So, and she was awful. Awful, awful, awful. Everything about that was awful. Then, of course, you know, we almost get some kind of an honest communication and a showdown between House and Cuddy. But, of course, we can't have that because that Greg House, he's all hung up and weird. And then, one, and I thought the ending with the serial killer guy was bad. Just one of the stupidest last like 5 minutes or so of a show I've ever seen. Because House wouldn't do that.
Right.
I don't care how angry he is or how self-destructive he is.
Or how stoned he is or how anything.
Yeah. And he was undoubtedly very, very stoned because we had seen earlier where Wilson had said, you've taken like 3 bottles of Vicodin in like 2 days or whatever it is like that. It was some line
I could
like
give
that.
You an infinite amount of Vicodin. You wouldn't drive your car into like my house.
So, yeah. And the thing is, he would not deliberately drive his car into her house because he wouldn't want to run the risk of hurting her child.
Well, that's exactly what I thought. It's like, and the kid who appears to have vanished from the show, but that was my thing, is like he wouldn't risk killing the kid, who by definition you wouldn't be able to see.
So I'm gonna lay $10 cash money down right now. I don't want to watch House next season, but you know, we will find out through the internets or something if this is what happens. Because at the end, you know, they're going, where's House? He's gonna be in the darkest, dankest place he could possibly be. Oh look, he's walking on a beach. I will lay $10 cash money right now. House was hallucinating his brains out on Vicodin, crashed his car into the house. He's unconscious and he's hallucinating that he's on a beach.
Well, so what? And so maybe there's obviously backstory here that I don't understand because Thomas was noting. And he said, you know, he's like, he was sort of noting that, like, he the same thing of, like, how will they possibly explain, like, all of this insanity that just happened? But so they had to retrofit the last, like, however many episodes, and what's-his-name came back. Shore came back to rewrite a bunch of stuff because I didn't get the whole thing of him. First of all, when they cut from him being inside Cuddy's house and then they cut to him being at the bar, but then they cut to him walking on a beach, and it looked like those were two different beaches altogether. I went back and watched it a few different times.
Yeah.
The beach when he's sitting at the bar and then the beach when he's walking alone, those are two different places altogether.
Yeah. I think, yeah, you know, what happened is he walked away from the accident and he's wherever he is and he's in another one of his hallucinatory
states. But were we
states.
Supposed to think, in other words, were we supposed to think that was all one long shot at the end of him at the bar with the tiki thing and drinking, and he's like, I'm not going home, and then he's walking, because it very clearly is like a different beach, a different time of day. It's like
I think that's just sloppy filmmaking.
Yeah, it's like a beautiful blue sky when he's sitting at the bar, and then when they cut to him doing the long walk along the beach, it's like gray, and it's obviously somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, I thought that was the thing, like, is he hallucinating that he's at this beautiful tiki bar, but really he's like walking along an empty stretch of New Jersey, you know, boardwalk or something?
Something like that.
So apparently there was all this rumor on the internet that he was going to run Cuddy down with the car. The people thought that he was just going to kill her and that was how she was going to go out. But there's just no way they do that because they know they're going to bring her back for a sweeps week or something, or for the series finale or something. But yeah, it was just so unbelievable. I mean, even as we've been saying a lot this season, even within the insane context of that show, it was like so patently, most literal sense, unbelievable.
Yeah, it was one of the worst moments in the single worst season of the show so far. The show has definitely run its course. It's gone. It's dead. They should just, you know, they should just put a stake in its heart and put us out of our misery.
Yeah, they should. Yes, Keelan, they should foreclose on House.
Thank you, Keelan.
Thanks. Thanks for saying that. Appreciate that. That's great. You know, and then blah, blah, blah. I felt bad for, like, poor Foreman and Chase, who were just sitting there, like, whittling sticks while, you know.
Yeah, every single actor on that show, it's like, God bless Lisa Edelstein for just getting the hell out.
Right.
Because every single actor on that show, and I think Hugh Laurie is incapable of not being good.
Right.
And you have to give him credit for giving what looks like 100% to every single one of these horrible, horrible episodes. But basically, you have a lot of very good actors who have to spend their days mouthing terrible dialogue, you know, in awful plots.
Yeah.
And everyone on the team was just completely wasted.
Well, and even
in
when they
episode.
Tried to do, like, a little bit of a plot with Tao, but it was just like,
look, you knock somebody up. Look, you knock somebody else up,
I'm hella
too.
Fertile. Yeah, and then so suddenly, it just feels like the show is flailing. I think that's my thing. It's like the center cannot hold, and so the show is just drifting apart into a bunch of separate component plot lines that don't make sense by themselves and certainly don't mesh together.
No, and you have a lot of writers that are just, you know, basically they've run out of stuff, and they're trying to create sandcastles with, like, one bucket of sand.
Right.
And it's just not working. They're already setting up for Chase and 13 to end up in some kind of a romantic relationship next season. Why? Because they're, like, the only two characters who haven't hooked up yet.
Right, right.
That's it. There's no reason for them to get involved with each other. But, you know, they've run out of ideas. There's nowhere else to go.
And apparently, what's his name? They said that, I guess, Robert Sean Leonard is thinking about leaving, too.
Good. He should have left a long time ago.
Yeah, it's either this season or next that his contract is up. So it's, you know, he's a guy. I mean, I want to say I feel sorry for him because, you know, as he himself said, he's getting a paycheck for not having to do a whole lot. But I mean,
he was the young Indiana Jones. He deserves better.
What do you mean he was the young Indiana Jones? Oh, on the Indiana Jones Chronicles.
Yeah.
Okay, not on the... Okay.
No.
But, yeah, I mean, it's... That's the other thing is, like, you just... Like, just the character of Wilson, you just wonder, like... He almost has become more fascinating to me than House because you wonder, like, you know, he's a good-looking guy, he's a doctor, he's wealthy, he's smart, he's funny, and at one point, I guess, was in the running to be banging Cuddy some seasons ago or whatever, so it's not like he has no... It's not like he's the total loser that he is painted to be. So you gotta wonder, like, what is his deal? Like, why does he continue just to you know, like, when the whole thing of, you know, of just letting House kind of order him around at this point, like, that actually has no logic to it either, but I almost find that more compelling than anything that Hugh Laurie's character is doing or Cuddy, because they're just sort of being moved around like cardboard chess pieces.
Well, we've run way past the point where there's
logical motivation.
Any logic to anyone remaining in his employ or remaining friends with him.
Yeah.
At all.
There was this moment last night where she comes and she's, you know, she says the thing of, like, let's finally just, and he's in the hospital bed taking Vicodin, let's finally just have that fight we've been meaning to have, as though they haven't had, like, any fights or as though they haven't had any blowouts. And then, I don't know, he says something obnoxious and, you know, and she keeps trying to get him to, like, open up and just, you know, like, tear down your walls of pain and your mortar of sadness and your whatever. And he says something really, really, really snarky, but that indicates that underneath he's willing to talk. And then she gives him that patented, oh, you, smile, and then walks away. The, oh, you're such a bad little boy. And it was like, and at that moment, I just felt like it was just, I had the most hideous sense of revulsion for the whole show. I mean, it was like in that one little, like, that darn House smile that she gave when she was walking away. That has become, like, the whole show to me, is that.
And I'm assuming David Shore has some idea what he's going to do next season.
Not necessarily.
I'm not assuming that it's good or that it makes any sense. But the thing is, they've written themselves into such a corner here because if any of what happened in this episode, the end of this episode, is not part of his hallucination, if he really did drive his car through the wall of her house.
That seems to be the ball game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And break Wilson's arm or sprain it in the process. Well, he now has lost, you know, his best friend. He's certainly not going to have a relationship with Ketty anymore. Let's face it, she's leaving. He's hella fired.
Yeah, Yes, yes, I would imagine he is. Well, the question is then, are they going to take the show somewhere else? Because...
But they kind of teased us with the promise of doing that when he went into the mental institution.
I guess that's true.
And we got like 3 episodes out of that.
And I guess it's easier to replace. It's easier to keep him there and replace Cuddy than to take him somewhere else and replace everybody, or else just have some show that takes place in 2 places simultaneously. You know, when you say that you think that Shore has some sort of a plan, it's worth noting, I'm not trying to compare the two in terms of their writing ability, but it is worth noting that that the only reason that Jed Bartlett ended up having MS is because there was some episode, I think literally because Martin Sheen had, like, pulled a muscle in his back, where Sorkin had to come up with a reason for the president to be in bed all day. And so he's like, he has MS. And just because I think he was literally, he had like 3 hours to get the thing, to get it written, and he hadn't written anything. And so he just smoked a big bag of crack and came up with, like, he's in bed with MS. And so it's not like out of the question that they, at the last moment, just said, what have we already shot? He's walking on a beach. He's yelling at Wilson. He takes Vicodin. Okay, right around that. And then just come up with some. Oh, and then Lisa's leaving. So work that, make it work. And I'll be back in an hour. And then he went for a massage, yeah. And he came back, and it's like, you know, and this is what they had. He's like, well, we got to go with something.
After that season finale, though, any writer on that show who isn't, like, sending out his resume furiously looking for another job for next season is an idiot.
Remember that time there was a serial killer on the show?
Yeah. That serial killer that no one in the House universe ever mentioned again.
Never paid off. Ever. And somebody says... Remember when they used to actually care enough to have the hospital scene show some semblance of reality as compared to a patient self-medicating from a big bottle of pills by his bedside? Yeah. All right. The only good thing about last night was there was Paula Marshall. That was it.
Yeah.
A little bit of a treat for Rick, but that's it. Other than that, it's just crap.
Crap, 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 crap.
All right.
Thank God that's over.
Yeah, seriously. I'm done. I'll put it this way. I will be curious to see how they work themselves out of this corner, like those Duke boys, the opening of next season, but not enough to watch. I care enough to watch to have somebody else tell me, like, how they do it. But I'm not giving the show any more time.
You know what I did to refresh my brain after last night's episode of House? Mm. This morning, while I was working, I've started rewatching Buffy.
Good for you.
On Netflix. I'm, like, about midway through season 2. I've just been rewatching Buffy.
Now, where are you going, with The Wire?
I kind of put The Wire on hold for a while because everything I was watching, The Killing and
I was bleak.
All stuff, it's just everything was really bleak.
No, that's true. No, and Buffy, at least for the most part, is, you know, that gives you, you get some amusement, you get some laughs out of Buffy. All right. So there you go. So I am so goddamn glad you're done talking about House. Yes, we are. So we are glad, you are glad, we're all glad. We'll put a pin in that. All right, awesome. So on that one note, we will bring a curtain down on today's program. Don't forget, tomorrow joining us in the studio will be a brand new, newly christened Neiman Fellow, Anna Griffin, thrice weekly columnist from the Oregonian. She'll be in the studio tomorrow. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News, followed by an encore of today's very fine Rick Emerson radio program. Don't forget, this coming Friday at the Hollywood Theater, a double feature back-to-back as we get ready to round out and conclude our May of the Dead for 2011. This Friday at the Hollywood Theater, it's going to be Demons and Night of the Comet back-to-back, followed by Zombie Game Day at Guardian Games on Saturday. So we'll be talking to Siegfried. He's going to be in the studio for that on Thursday. You can find out more about that by going to mayofthedead.com. It is mayofthedead.com. Oh, and we'll horror your thing here in a second. By the way, don't forget as well, Zombie Economics, a guide to personal finance by Lisa Desjardins and myself, along with our good friend Todd the Corpse Workhoven. That is also available at Zombie Economics. .com. That is a zombie. And you know what? Graduation season, it's here.
Yes.
That young person leaving school, saddled with many thousands of dollars in debt. And would you like to know how I describe this? Let's just real quickly, and then we'll whore your chocolates, and then we'll end. Well, seriously, okay. I mean, it's like, you know,
let's whore everything.
It's funny that you did that during Legion of News today, because I was just thinking about Stern the other day. I don't know if you ever much of a Stern listener, and I really wasn't. But it's like, Stern, at the end of his show, it basically just became like 40 minutes of plugs, where it was like, Jackie the Joke Man Martling, his new comedy CD, 1,000 Great Yucks, is available at, and he would just be listing off, like, you know, and it's like, you know, meanwhile, Fred Norris is going to be appearing at the Chuckle Hut this weekend, and he was just, everything everybody had to sell. So, let me just, hold on, let me find some different music for this. Hold on, we'll do this. I was talking to Greg and Sarah on Fun Employment when we were talking about the week that the Zombie Economics signing, and I was talking about And Stephen King has talked about this. If you do a lot of interviews for anything, for a project or a movie, and you've heard actors do this on junkets, where you can tell that, like, they're answering a question they've been asked like a million times before, and they just sort of press a button in their head, and it's like, and the pre-recorded answer just starts spinning out, and it's like the tape just rolls. So, here, we'll see how well I can make this sound. How could I do it, making this sound spontaneous? So, let's see. Okay, so you ask me this. You be the interviewer.
Okay.
You know, like maybe you be. Well, you can be show ponying in the morning.
Okay.
And then ask me about you know. Well, you know, Rick, it's May, it's graduation, blah blah blah. The book, students.
Okay, can I ask this as like an NPR person?
Yes, yes,
okay.
Do that. And I'll give you my answer. We'll see if it can sound spontaneous.
So, Rick, the graduation season is coming up, and we have a number of high school students that are looking how to best maximize their own finances.
Uncanny.
What sort of advice would you have for high school students?
Like I'm there.
Who are graduating?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, Don. And, you know, here's the here's the thing about college, Don. You know, if you're leaving college right now, you know, that's, you know, to put it in terms that the young people might understand, Don, it's, I'm not really selling the sincerity, I guess.
I think you're doing an excellent job.
Thank you, I appreciate that. You know, leaving college in 2011, especially what with the trying economic times and all, it's a bit like being dropped into the 13th level of a video game, but with no weapons or armor, and then being told you have to get to a safe house on the other side of town because there's cool stuff there, but you got to get there first. And so, you know, and that's kind of what college, because you come out into this difficult economy where everybody is you know, angling for an increasingly small series of jobs. You're already $20,000 in debt, blah 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 blah, zombies, da 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 da. There you go.
Just, and I understand your book was published using entirely green technology.
I should start saying that. I should completely say that. It's not true at all in any way.
Your entire book was created using nothing but wind-powered energy.
I think it was I think it was made in China, actually. So I check, but I don't carry a copy of it around with me. I do. I'm going to check after the show. I should totally start saying that it was made using green technology, because it's like, how would they know? That's wonderful. Yeah. I don't really end that with blah, 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 by the way, in real life.
No.
So you can find out more about that by going to zombieeconomics.com. That is zombieeconomics.com. All kidding aside, though, if you know somebody who's going to be graduating from high school or college, here's the thing, and what I will say that is true, or am I just, again, feigning sincerity by doing the insincere thing and then now sounding sincere? Mm. See, it becomes a whole thing. But here's what my mom would say if she were... If you don't want your kids to, like, get out of college and be saddled with so much debt that they end up moving back home with you because they don't know how to save their money or, like, spend properly, so you get them a copy of Zombie Economics and like, their bedroom that you've made into a sewing room or, like, a room for, like, your baseball card collection can stay that, as opposed to, like, your deadbeat-ass kids having to come back home and sponge off you. So that is zombieeconomics.com. But what about chocolate, Don?
What about chocolate? PolidoriChocolates.com, where you can find Polydory chocolates.
Wait, let me ask this as Larry King.
Okay.
I don't have any Larry King music here. Hold on. Okay. Let's see if I've got... What have I got here that might work as as Larry King music? Let's see. Well, let's see. No, I'll just have to do... I'll just have to do this for some... This is the only... I've used everything else. Chocolate phosphates. Now, when I was a boy, the chocolate phosphate, that, Don Taylor, as good as it got... Do you ever have a chocolate phosphate?
No.
At Maury's on the corner. It was water, it was seltzer, milk, and the secret ingredient, the vine. Wonderful. At Elaine's, they have the bourbon, not so much the phosphate. Dawn Taylor, she has chocolates of her own. They can be purchased. You can buy them. Talk to me.
Truffles. Chocolate truffles made with locally sourced ingredients wherever possible. Also, Guittard and Felchlin chocolates. Felchlin being a Swiss chocolate, by the way. Also, my website, polydorychocolates.com. Green website, hosted by a green hosting company called Canvas Dreams.
Is that true?
Here in Portland, yes.
Excellent.
I'm actually hosted by a green hosting company that's like wind-powered or something.
Sure, sure they are.
But yeah, we have the Chocanomicon, the H.P. Lovecraft themed chocolates, the Seven Deadly Sins, which a different chocolate for each of the Seven Deadly Sins, evoking your venial sins in delicious chocolate form. Also homemade marshmallows. If you have never had a homemade marshmallow, you have never lived. So, and the homemade marshmallows come also coated in coconut, toasted coconut, or dark chocolate. Excellent stuff. And just on a side note, I'm trying to pay off my husband's medical bills, and it's ugly. So do a sister a favor and order some delicious chocolate, because instead of having one of those sort of fundraising things where we invite everyone to like the Hollywood Theater for an evening of entertainment where we raise money so that I don't end up going home in a box, instead I am making delicious chocolate for you, the listener.
Angie Dickinson.
PolydoriChocolates.com.
There you go. So fantastic. Legs to the floor. Move like Jell-O on springs. All right. Back after, I guess we're not back after this. I guess we're back after like the next 21 hours of broadcasting or something. But after this, after this encore presentation of Legion of News, which is coming up in real moments, we'll have an encore of this very fine radio program and so forth. We'll see you again tomorrow at noon for Legion of News at Cascadia.fm. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, right up by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Ackler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Anna Griffin from the Oregonian, and Thursday, our good friend Siegfried, and Friday, Big Jim Willick. So, as always, we thank you for listening. It is Tuesday, May 24th, 2011, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, see you tomorrow. Bye now.